This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Manuk Dencher Blue Bomber game day as the Winnipeg Blue Bombers head into week four and kick off week four by hosting the Toronto Argonauts tonight. Ricky Ray and the crew. Manuk Dencher Blue Bomber game day officially begins at 5:30 with Darren Bomby, Troy Westwood, and Chris Walby. We'll kick it off today right now. Throughout the morning with you, Rick Ralph of the Don Vito Roundtable, Husser with the Gondola Pizza warm-up, and then the afternoon ride. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki with you right now. Lots to talk about today. Of course, the Bomber game. Mayweather-McGregor, round two. Milos Raonic has been eliminated. Andrew Kopp apparently has a new contract. And what that does to the cap for the Winnipeg Jets. Two-year deal, reportedly. Sidney Crosby spoke yesterday about concussions, concussion treatments, and his views on them. We'll hear from that during the Royal Sports Power Hour as well. Matt Cause, Chris Schultz, Jeff Hamilton going to join us as well in an hour of your phone calls. The Big Show has a lot to get to. Let's get to it. Gentlemen, how are we today?
Not too bad. Quite a day yesterday. Huh? Just our golf game got canceled because of the rain and the crap. And then, though, by about 6, 7 o'clock, sunny as the dickens and warm, perfect for a night of soccer. I was up there with the boys last night under the lights at the Ralph Contafio Complex. I just love being under the lights. I talk to you guys most mornings about soccer because it's what I do pretty much every single weeknight. But a great game with the boys last night and under the lights. It was just a glorious Manitoba-type evening last night.
Did you get out golfing?
No. And I'm not bitter at all about it. No, yeah, I had to.
Because you were going to brave it.
Oh, I was totally down to, but.
It was pretty ugly, huh?
But, yeah, solo-wise, I'm not that hardcore. I'm almost that hardcore, but not that hardcore. It was a Food Network kind of night for me last night, so.
Oh, dear. Oh,
that's about as good as golf.
What did we learn last night on the Food Network?
Oh, nothing to learn. I put all my skills to the test is all.
It's just all glory. Just all glory on the Food Channel. Excellent stuff, gentlemen. Lots to get to. We're going to start with the Blue Bombers and Argos, but first up, the ESPYs last night. Did you watch? Did you take it in? Did you
watched a little bit and have watched some of the highlights and all the rest of it. Not sure how I feel. It was pretty good. It was okay. Manning was decent and some fun. PK Subban, of course, the biggest splash.
Wow.
No question. But yeah, well, no question about it. And the cabbie stuff on the red carpet was always fun. I always like what he brings to the table. It was pretty cool.
You had me with the bottle and the lady on the arm. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I
and
needed
that wild
to see
tongue, yeah.
Gene Simmons come out.
they said skip to PK having fun. They
right.
Skipped to PK having fun. They gave the people what they wanted.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was. I like to PVR things like that so I could just kind of skip through what I wanted to skip through and that sort of thing. So, if I had to sit down and watch the 3 hours, it would have been too much, I think, but it was all right. I thought the Bill Murray skit or whatever happened there was really weird and awkward. I didn't really enjoy that.
I just watched the highlights too, like Troy said. And
yeah, it was. Yeah, I guess that was more so if people sat down and watched it. But the Cubs won for best moment, just winning the World Series, and Nick Offerman, who I'm a big fan of, was out there. He's also a lifelong Cubbies fan, so for him it was kind of the coolest thing ever. Then Bill Murray comes out and, you know, kind of plays like he's still wasted a little bit from the celebration party sort of thing, and it just dragged on and was weird.
Huh.
Didn't enjoy it. I love Bill Murray, but it was weird.
Like a bad SNL skit.
Yeah, a really bad one.
That's an interesting thing you brought up, because I was really happy for guys like Bill Murray and lifelong, you know, celebrities who have been lifelong, John Cusack. Chris Chelios was on the field after the game. And seeing all that, you know, celebrities who embrace it as well. But the Bill Murray thing got weird once he got into the locker room and they're just showering him.
I liked it last
time.
Thank
you.
I liked all that sort of stuff.
You did, eh?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think locker room celebrations when winning a championship should be for the team, the organization, and their family.
Yeah, and drink.
You know, I have no problem with them at the parade. I have no problem on the field and all that. But when you go into that room,
it's like it's sacred, right?
Well, yeah. Like you're not on the team,
but you're not going in uninvited, voice. Right?
The no, team, I understand.
The team's bringing you in.
But like, where's the cutoff? I guess
I think it's more jealousy.
Pretty much
on
after
my part.
Bill Murray.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Wow.
Yeah, you have 3 decades of solid comedy movies that you're in.
I guess it is. Not so fast, Mr. Chelios.
That's right.
Kuzak, you haven't had a hit in years. Take it easy. Anyways, let's get into this Bargos. Hey, that's what the kids do now on Twitter. The Bargos game. The Bombers and the Argos game on a Minuut Denture game day. We're going to delve into it. We're going to talk with Chris Schultz, Jeff Hamilton to help tee it up as well. But just we've talked a lot about the intricacies about this game and what the 2-1 Argos bring in and what the Winnipeg Blue Bombers at 1-1 could have and the injuries. We'll get into that stuff more specifically. But what's your feeling? What's your gut on this game tonight?
Nervous as all heck about this game, for sure. There's a bunch of different aspects of this game when you start looking at the stats and yeah, it's only 2 games for the Bombers. As far as stats go, but you have it's starting to lean one way or the other. I'm kind of surprised the Bombers are 3.5-point favorites, but you know that doesn't always mean a whole lot one way or the other. But I'm a little bit surprised that by the number here for the Bombers. When you look at some of the things that sort of clash against one another here, that make you that much more sort of taken aback if you're a Bombers fan when you're looking at these stats. And you see something along the lines of first average gain on first down and the Bombers being second last with 4.8 yards. And then you look at Toronto, who is averaging an astonishing 7.6 yards on first down. Like, think about the implication over a couple of games when you typically – you've got second and 2.5 up compared to second and 5 and a bit. Like, it's just – it's remarkable how different – your approach is in that situation. And then the flip side of that, as far as what your opponent is averaging for first down pickups, is the Bombers already give their opponents 7.1 as an average. That's right. So the Bombers, the teams that they're playing against, are picking up big yards on first down, where you have Toronto coming in that is averaging number one in the CFL at that. So when you're it's a little bit scary to think of just exactly how successful Toronto might be. And, of course, if you pick up 7-8 yards on first down, your options to pick up the first down on second down are considerably better than that. And Toronto is the second best team at limiting what the opponent gains on first down. So just that whole sort of thing is a little bit scary. Interestingly, guess who has surrendered the most turnovers so far this year in the CFL? With only 2 games played. That would be the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Last year, that was one of the things that separated. That's one of the things that propelled the Bombers to being as solid as they were with their record, right? With that whole plus 29 thing. And pretty much everyone except for the Bomber defense saying you're not going to be able to repeat that. The Bombers right now are second last in turnover ratio at -3 after 2 games. And that is of concern. And then a whole the quarterback sacks thing, which I've touched on a lot here. And just how effective Toronto is getting to the quarterback. Still shocking to me that they are twice as many, double the number of sacks as the second best team in the CFL with 14 already. In 3 games, the Toronto Argonauts are going to be a handful and a half tonight, boys. And if the Bombers don't go out there with their A game, they're going to be on the wrong side of this one after 4 quarters.
I love when you paint a rosy picture of the game before it, you know, on the Bombers side of things. And it's almost like the turnover number is not sustainable year to year. It's weird how that works out and how everyone called that happening. But this is a game that I think I'm going to call it the peace of mind game, where if the Bombers can pull out a W here, and I don't even care how they do it, to be totally honest, but if they can win this game, you get back to 2-1, all is kind of right for a little bit in Bomberland. And you could even afford to go out to BC and drop that one, and 2-2 is not the worst spot in the world.
Yep.
But if you lose this game, 1-2 isn't the end of the world either. But you're telling me you're going to lose to Toronto at home and get a win in BC the following week against, I know Ricky Ray leads the CFL in passing right now, but does BC have a better passing attack than the Argos do? I mean, you could make the case that they certainly do. So this is a game that I think the Bombers just flat out need to win because they should be a better team than Toronto. I know Toronto's had a great start to the year, but they should be a better team than the Argonauts. So I'm expecting and hoping for a win. It won't be easy, but I think they can certainly do it. And it'll be interesting to see what their game plans are on both sides of the ball because, I mean, you mentioned the sack numbers and Matt Nichols mentioned the Stubler defense. And you kind of wonder if there's going to be a lot of those quick hit slants and things like that. And I also wonder a little bit if maybe Paul Appelese utilizes the draw game as a tool with the running game and maybe some screens to kind of mitigate the bit of insanity we're seeing from the Argos pass rush right now. And on defense, I mean, you kind of wonder how you battle Ricky Ray, right? Like, do you go pressure and leave yourself vulnerable in the secondary with some one-on-one matchups, or
very similar to Bo Levi, where he can beat you regardless of which way. It's like pick your poison, more or less, right?
Yeah, and you know, if I'm the Bombers defense tonight, I'm not letting SJ Green beat me. If it means a double team, it means a double team. But then you leave yourself vulnerable mm-hmm. to a guy that I've been a big fan of for three games so far, and that's our Monty Edwards, who Ricky Ray is becoming a pretty big fan of and has been right away. And Edwards was actually a quarterback at Appalachian State in the NCAA. So it'll be interesting. But I do think that the Bombers, it's not a must win. I think it's a need to win because they showed last year 1-4 they can come back and still make the playoffs. But for the peace of mind of everybody in Winnipeg and Manitoba, just get a W and let us kind of relax for a week.
This is the Big Show on TSN 1290. Jim Torrey and Brandon delving into this Blue Bombers Argos game day here on TSN 1290. Does it matter in the fashion in which they win or lose? If it's 2 points, if it's three, if it's 10?
I don't think so. I can't remember the term that Wicks used, but I was thinking yesterday, this sort of a landscape game where for Bomber fans anyway, you know, you lose to Calgary and everyone sort of shrugs their shoulders and you bring up the level of dominance by the Stampeders over the last couple of seasons and heaven forbid the historical record that they've accumulated here against the Bombers, but you lose to Calgary and everyone can sort of shrug that off the shoulders, right? But you lose this one and this one sort of would change the perspective, I think, of a lot of Bomber fans where you go, whoa, you know, dropping two at home. And this one, like, I know Wick's saying it's not a must win and they can't come back and all the rest of it, but boy, you're putting yourself behind in a pretty grand fashion here if you drop the second of a back-to-back home series against a team that most people had as kind of the free spot or what was going to be one of the weaker brothers in the CFL here. Surprising for sure, but you have to win this game tonight. You can't lose this game.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is, there's no must wins until there's a must win, but I also believe that this is something that sets the pace. I'm not too worried about Jeff, what's his name? Jackson Jeffcoat. Jackson Jeffcoat, the linebacking position with Knox, I mean, was expected to be a starter, wasn't, got beat out by Hurl, and fair enough. But I'm concerned about that. But how they get to Ricky Ray, how they manage Ricky Ray, how they tame Ricky Ray in order to get this win. And I expect to see the offense. I expect to see the offense play better than they did last week against the Calgary Stampeders. So it is going to be an interesting game to me as well. And we'll continue to delve into it. We'll hear from, I believe, Matt Nichols at the bottom of the hour, some Bombers audio for you. We're also going to tee up some hockey stuff. But up next, speaking of hockey, Andrew Kopp reportedly gets a new contract. What does that do to the cap and what did he get? We'll talk about that next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Leave the back gate unlocked this summer because TSN's coming over, and we have come over to a few houses already on select evenings throughout the summer. TSN 1290 will back up the truck with a portable party for up to 25 people, including catering by Qdoba Mexican Eats, including a burrito bowl hot bar with tortillas. You can make tacos and an abundance of three cheese queso beverages, including a sampling of Tallgrass Vodka, Winnipeg's only grain-to-bottle vodka produced by Capital K Distillery. A family pack of fireworks to light up your night, courtesy of Archangel Fireworks. An iGrill 2 digital app-connected thermometer for each grand prize winner, provided by Lux Barbecue Company. And a hot tub for you to soak in over the course of 1 week, provided by our friends at Oasis Leisure Center. We also have the TSN 1290 crew on site to help serve up and set up. Parties will happen Thursday evenings from now until August, including July 20th and August 10th. Enter online at tsn1290.ca, and we could be seeing you very, very soon. Kim Matthew had us over this past week. It was great. Good times. Nothing got too rowdy. Rick Ralph was there.
Is he double-fisted? Typically is at those barbecues.
You know, he said, I've got a six-pack of such and such. If you want to indulge, I didn't know if we'd bring our own. I'm like, I didn't know we were supposed to either, so I will indulge you. So
nice.
Kim was gracious, too. Gave us some chocolate chip cookies, offered us beverages, and it was a really good time. Lots of people there.
Cool.
So it was a good time, and we'll do it again coming up later on this month. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki with you on the big show this morning, our Manuk Dencher Blue Bomber game day. That official show begins at 5:30 today with Chris Walby, Darren Bombing, and Mr. Troy Westwood. We'll get more into the Bomber game. We'll hear from Matt Nichols in our next segment. But right now, reported last night by Aaron Ward, works for the NHL Network, I believe, or a broadcasting crew in the U.S., and reported that Andrew Kopp got a two-year deal in the range of $2 million. Then Darren Dreger did some digging, the insider on TSN, and came up with it's a two-year deal, $900,000 in the first year, $1.1 million in the second year, has an AAV of $1 million, gentlemen. So Andrew Kopp is now signed, and the only restricted free agent or unrestricted free agent, well, unrestricted, I guess, doesn't matter. The only restricted free agent RFA the Jets have left is Connor Hellebuck, who has filed for arbitration. The Jets now, with this deal, have $8.905 left in cap space. $8.9 million, just over, in cap space left. And they have about $4 million wrapped up around Nick Ehlers and Patrick Laine and some bonuses. So leaving about $4.9 million roughly. I'm assuming that the reason I'm told about these bonuses is there's little doubt that both gentlemen will collect them, especially Laine. So about $4 million left in cap space. We'll start with the contract itself. Andrew Kopp, a mil per. What do you think?
I don't mind the mil per, but how do you work in a no move and a no trade clause into it? I'm just joking. Yeah, the mil per, a mil is a deal, right? It's great. If you look at the upside of Andrew Kopp, and last year it was an interesting spot for him, right? Because at the end of the year previous to that, Shane Knighty joined us one morning and said that he didn't see next year them going with Lowry and Kopp down the middle. So it looked like there's going to be a shakeup of some sort with those two. Early on, it became clear that they were pretty happy with what Lowry was doing, or with the upside aspect of it. And Andrew Kopp ends back up with the Jets here as last year continues on, gets some opportunity with the top line, and looks like he's pretty comfortable in that situation. And at times, people seem to be pretty excited about what his upside is. And I think he had a pretty solid year last year, all told. So $1 million is... it is fine and dandy, and he fits in well, and it will be interesting to watch him continue to sort of evolve, and you just wonder just what exactly his ceiling might be.
17 points in 64 games, including 9 goals.
Yeah, it's a fair deal for both sides, and the typical Chevy one, right? 2 years for an RFA, right around $1 million per. So, I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of wiggle room with how much he was going to make anyway, so I guess the conversation kind of centers more around where does he slot in next year? And I don't know. I mean, I like his game a lot more on the wing, to be honest with you. I think he plays super well along the boards, and I find that he's able, offensively at least, to get his shot off a little bit more, which is his best asset offensively. Because he does, you know, outside of Line A and probably Scheifele, he does probably have, you know, the third best shot on the Winnipeg Jets. He just doesn't use it that often and doesn't get the chance to, and that's what kind of separates, you know, the elite goal scorers in the NHL from the guys like Andrew Kopp, who are more of a bottom six player. But I don't know who the fourth line center is going to be yet for this team, but depending on who they slot in there, I would like to see Kopp move out to the wing full time. But I don't know if that will present itself early on, at least for the Jets.
I would have no problem with that move. And it is, like, I saw more out of him last year. I just don't know what the ceiling could be. I don't know if he's got 50 points in him, if he's got 20 goals, 25 goals in him. I think he's got the skill.
He's not getting paid like it.
Well, no, yeah. Well, not at this point. I mean, he's 23 years old. I'm talking, like, by the time he's a 28-year-old, is what's he going to be? What's he going to look like? But I liked his versatility last year, and at a million per, I have no issue with it at all. I just, again, much like you guys, like, where's he going to fit in? And his diversity he showed last year, I guess, helps him in that. But who's the fourth line center? Which wing is he going to be on? And he started the season in the Moose last year, 8 games. And I'm wondering if where that all plays out. But I do see him as a roster spot on this team.
Certainly to start, yeah. And I would like to, just if we were to say right now, and with the step that Patan took in his game from the year previous to last year, I've got to think that there's another step that he's going to tap into coming into this season. I would sure like to see Andrew Kopp on the left side of Nick Patan, possibly on that fourth line.
And with a Armia or a Dano? Or?
Well, not probably Armia, Dano. But probably Dano, yeah. Dano, yeah.
I mean, this kind of comes down to Adam Lowry in a lot of ways, too, and how the Jets are going to utilize him. Because I don't know. Like, I wonder if they're going to go with the Lowry, Mathias, Armia crew as their third line again. And I wonder about Sean Mathias's place with the team, because me and Jim talk about this a lot, where we kind of try and make our opening night lineups, and the guy we always, you know, not to offend, but the guy we always kind of forget about is on the team is Sean Mathias.
Yeah.
And you just wonder where he fits on the team, especially if you think Kyle Connor's going to be an 82-game player this year. If Kyle Connor's an 82-game player, he's in that top nine somewhere. And if that's the case, he's certainly bumping down a guy like Sean Mathias, and it just kind of it clouds what you do down there with the bottom six.
And I do have Connor on the team. Like, I do have him playing the full season this year. It is going to be interesting. And Mathias, 12 points, 8 goals in 45 games. Injured, of course, but the 45-game production, I thought he played well, too. So it's going to be very interesting. We'll delve into this a little bit more and get your thoughts on the Boss Pizza fan line, what you think of the Kopp contract as well. Up next, back to the Blue Bombers. They host the Argos. Matt Nichols spoke with the media yesterday. We'll have that for you on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
The absolute deadline is this Friday at noon for TSN 1290 at Robertson College's presentation of Manitobaville. Manitobaville. We're awarding $25,000 to put towards a project that enhances one special Manitoba community. To enter, rally your friends and family and make a video about your hometown. Tell us how $25,000 could make it an even better place to live. Record that video telling us once again how your hometown would spend $25,000 to improve it or help it with an existing project, and send it to us at tsn1290.ca by noon this Friday. That's tomorrow, noon on July the 14th. 10 finalists will be revealed Monday, July 24th, and the public will vote for a winner to receive the $25,000. Manitobaville, make your hometown even prouder. Presented by Robertson College and proudly supported by Chicken Chef, Star Ready to Move Homes, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, Merit Contractors. For more information and official rules and regulations, you can go to tsn1290.ca. The Big Show on TSN 1290. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki. 35 minutes past the hour. The Bombers host the Argos tonight. The Argos have a very good defense. 15 sacks, is it, in 3 games or 14?
14.
14 sacks in 3 games for the Argos pass rush. And quarterback of the Bombers, Matt Nichols, was asked about that pass rush.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that poses a lot of challenges. And, you know, line of scrimmage is where a lot of games are won and lost. And obviously it's going to be a big challenge for our guys, but it's something that, you know, I think we're prepared for. And it's going to be a tough game from start to finish. And, you know, they've gotten a lot of hits on the quarterback and made it tough on guys. So, you know, anticipate obviously 4 quarters of a fight, and you know we're gonna have to handle those guys as much as we can and make plays when they're available.
He took a beating last week at the hands of a depleted Calgary Stampeders defensive line. What are your thoughts on the Bombers' blue line so far this year after two games and the protection of Matt Nichols?
Well, I don't know that he took a beating, and to say that he was hit often, it was more the three, I just remember three shots that he really got clocked pretty good. I believe they were all blindside shots too. So I'm not sure. There was one time I believe that it looked like Andrew Harris was late getting to where he needed to get to. So I'm not sure of exactly the role that the O-line played. I think you have to look at the O-line and still, you know, just wait a little bit here to see, to be able to measure it. But this, again, tonight, when you're talking about, you know, Stanley Bryant and Jamarcus Hardwick, the level that they're going to have to play at here up against guys like Victor Butler and Sean Lemon, like, what a wicked test tonight. And I warned before that Calgary game, you know, be careful in just sort of dismissing the Calgary defense, because an organization like Calgary with John Huffnagel as the GM and what they've got for depth there, they've got guys in their locker room that would be household names if they had an opportunity to play. And we just saw them kind of a combination of play well and also scheme well with some of those blitzes. So you would think that Toronto will do much the same. They will have devoured that game film and have seen some of the questionable spots maybe, or where the Bombers might be a little bit leaky, and just kind of look out here with what Lemon and Butler can bring to the table. Now, having said that, we have seen in the past, I think of the games last year against Hamilton, where Paul LaPolice was masterful at calling plays to really thwart rushes that were being successful at that point in time. So I would not be surprised whatsoever if we saw a lot of quick type plays to sort of slow down that push that Toronto's got tonight.
Screens and draws will be the best friends for the Bombers tonight, you think. And if that can slow down the pass rush, and if Matt Nichols has time, I don't really see a reason why they can't put up, you know, close to 30 points against the Argos. Mainly because of Paul LaPolice. Like Troy said, he's been a mastermind essentially since he's come over here and kind of catering to guiding the Bombers and helping them out. And I thought he had a good game plan last week against Calgary. They just didn't execute on a number of those plays. Like, if Matt Nichols doesn't throw that pick in the end zone in the first quarter to get things started, you're looking at 3, maybe even 7 points, and the complexion of the game is completely different going into the second half. So I'm not too worried about the offense, and even with the Argos pass rush, I'm not overly worried about that. For me, it's going to be things defensively until the Bombers prove they can go 4 quarters without giving up, you know, 400 or 500 yards in a game.
The Big Show on TSN 1290. We're breaking down the audio from Matt Nichols yesterday ahead of tonight's Bombers Argos game. Along the line of the offensive line, Matt Nichols was also asked about the team's run game.
A lot of that has to do with how well some of these fronts and linebacker crews are across the league. I mean, they do a good job of stopping the run, and then we're playing 3-down football. If you can't be successful early running the ball, it's tough to stick with it. So, you know, for us, it's always a focus, and I think every team, that's always going to be a focus, because, like you said, it does take pressure off you and helps open things up. But you can talk about it as much as you want to. You got to go out and do it. And like I said, it's going to be a tough 4 quarters against this defense, and we look forward to the challenge.
And remember, Toronto, like the Bombers, talking like they want to establish maybe that run game a little bit more and start to go towards more of a balanced attack. They've been 81-19 as far as pass and run for yardage this year, compared to the Argos being 91% pass and only 9% running. Toronto is averaging just 40 yards on the ground, but a real scary 399. To be averaging 399.7 yards in the air is remarkable. And you take how much, like, they're second in net yards in the CFL, but they're only seventh in scoring. So they've been in the red zone 12 times and have only scored 3 touchdowns. They've been sniffing around the red zone a lot. And you would think with Ricky Ray at the helm that that's a little bit of an aberration, right? That they're going to get that back on track. So the Bomber defense is going to have their hands full tonight. And we've all heard that bend not break and all the rest of that sort of stuff here at the Bomber D. But, boy, whether it's causing Toronto to punt or creating turnovers here, you get the feel, kind of like last week, although it didn't transpire, that tonight could be a bit of a track meet as well.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. Mike O'Shea was asked about the Argos run game, and he kind of gave the diplomatic, well, you know, you got to be careful because they'll burn you. Kind of thing, like, you know, they run it five times a game, so if we literally don't have 10 players on the field, they might pick up 8 or 9 yards, kind of thing. So this does come down to them. I mean, if Ricky Ray throws for under 300 yards, the Bombers will win this game by 14 points at the minimum. This Argos team is completely and solely dependent on what Ricky Ray does from the pocket at this point, so I don't even concern myself with the Argos run game, and I don't even know if the Argos do either. I don't even think they care at this point, right? Like, if you're, like you said, second in the CFL in net yards per game, hey, you know, it's not the ideal balance. It's not what you typically expect from a football team, but if that's what your personnel dictates, that's what your personnel dictates.
One scary thing for the Bombers D and Bombers fans is that the running back for the Argos is Brandon Whitaker. And there have been far too many games against the Bombers where Brandon Whitaker has been wildly effective.
He hasn't had the great start to the season, as we just discussed, and the amount of attempts he gets, but he can be a dynamic running back for sure. But, Troy, how important is it to start winning games at home?
Well, for Pete's sake, it's real important. And they have such a doggone mountain to climb out of, or a hole to climb out of, sorry. Just like, I mean, they're down near the Earth's core as far as what they got to climb out of, right? Molten lava splashing around. When you're 11-26 at home, like, how many years are you talking about to get that record to 500 sort of thing? You're talking about a 3-4 year battle of real good home football. So, yeah, it's real unfortunate the way the IGF has opened up. It has turned around a lot, though. Ed Tate points out in his column that the Bombers, since last July, have the second best record in the CFL. So, not all at home, but just being 11-4 and playing at a different level last year. Just the home record will turn itself around here as the organization continues to get stronger moving forward. Right, but a real unfortunate, brutal start to IGF. No doubt about that.
Bombers quarterback Matt Nichols was asked about needing to win at home.
Yeah, it's very important. I mean, this game's all about how you bounce back. There's never going to be 18 games where you play perfectly every single game. I mean, there's always ups and downs throughout a season, throughout a game, and it's how you respond to those things. And I feel like, you know, for myself, been through a lot in my career, and, you know, having one game where I felt like I didn't play my best, you know, is not a tough challenge for me. I'm gonna answer the call and come back and play a better game for my teammates. And, you know, I'm happy that was a short week and we get right back out on the field in front of our home crowd, and you know, I look forward to getting out there tomorrow.
If you're a good team, you dominate at home. That's just that's all there is to it. And there's a long time, I think it was Eddie that we had on a little earlier, talking about and reminiscing about the Bombers record back in the old days where you just didn't come into Winnipeg and win. So they definitely need to use that as an advantage of theirs here. Like, last year's record, it's bizarre, right? Ultimately, last year, the end of the season, they were 4-5 at home, 7-2 on the road. That's just kooky and goofy, and I don't know why that transpired to the degree that it did last year. But certainly, this home thing, whatever this curse or whatever's going on here needs to be shaken off and definitely start tonight.
An Investors Group field, Mike O'Shea talks about it, is loud and can cause a difference. And you know, walking into the stadium last week, just as the game was starting, and on the PA, you could hear that over the course of 4 or 5 years, the crowd has caused so many, you know, false start penalties and this and that, and the crowd was getting, you know, going, and I do think that it they have to start getting some wins at home, having to start making that place something that is raucous and pumping and going and tough to play in. I think there's too many teams that come in and just sort of quash the crowd and enjoy playing there a lot more than some of the Bombers do sometimes. Which doesn't make sense, but it I see it happen during games. By the third quarter, other teams are celebrating and having a better time than the home team.
Well, and specifically Alberta. Alberta's never lost it at IGF.
Yeah.
The province of Alberta with Edmonton and Calgary, they've never lost here.
I have never seen a win at IGF. And I haven't been to a ton of games since it's open, but I've been to a fair amount.
Really?
I have never seen
That's
a win
horrible.
At home before.
That is horrible.
It is. It's
that
terrible.
Is bizarre.
My record at Canada Inns was pretty sparkling, but at the new, like, that's kind of the wild thing. There's a lot of fans in the province that have probably been to Bomber games over the years and have never seen them win, which is unthinkable, especially with the way they've turned it around the past year or so.
Ed Tate points out in his piece today, I'll tweet it out right away, that the only winning record the Bombers have at IGF is against Saskatchewan at 3-2. They're 2-2 against Montreal and BC and 0-11 against Calgary and Edmonton.
And it's like, I'm not coming from the perspective you have to win at home. It's just that it would help and be beneficial and be more fun and more enjoyable this season. Like Michael Shea talks about it constantly, our fans, when this place gets going. And it just seems it's rarely gets going and lasts throughout a game. I'll go back to that Banjo Bowl when they won three games that year, but they beat Saskatchewan and that night traded Buck Pierce. But that building was rocking.
It was loud,
that day. That's the, and I think there was only 12-10 was the score or something. I don't know.
Yep.
But that place was the loudest I heard it that night, and it was really pumping. We'll hear from Mike O'Shea later on in the program as well. And we're going to take a break now. We're going to talk a little bit of tennis, but it was round two of McGregor-Mayweather. We'll talk a little bit more about that and perhaps why some listeners don't like us talking about it. It's an interesting topic. That's next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Robertson College present the return of the 10K Summer Selfie. We have $10,000 in cash and prizes towards select selfie takers across Manitoba, and you could be one of the recipients. To enter, it's really simple. Take a really good selfie some point during the summer and post it before Thursday, August 31st, to Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram using the hashtag 10K Summer Selfie. Selfie of the Summer presented by Robertson College could net you $5,000, and $1,000... could be coming your way for Best Animal Selfie presented by Assiniboia Park Zoo, Best Food and Drink Selfie presented by Booster Juice, Best Hair Selfie presented by Aura Hair Group, Best Outdoor Selfie presented by Lacoste Garden Center, and Best Smile Selfie presented by Toddlers to Teens. For more information, visit TSN1290.ca. Jim, Troy, and Brandon on The Big Show. TSN 1290, Matt Caw is going to join us at 7 o'clock to kick off the Royal Sports Power Hour. Matt Larkin from the Hockey News. This is going to be a great discussion because they tweeting out yesterday how tough it took them as long to figure out the Central Division rankings or predictions as it did the rest of the NHL.
Mm-hmm. I can't wait to hear. And I love, ever since we started this gig like 6 or so years ago, my favorite publication magazine-wise is when the Hockey News comes out with their forecast and the breakdowns and all the rest. I just love it. The way they break down everything. It's kind of like the digest when you're out at the Downs. The same sort of thing with this, with the way they break everything down.
I love looking at those things to see whether it's the Jets or the Flyers, like whoever your favorite team is, and you're excited for it. You open it up, see where they are. That's crap. It's crap. Seventh place, crap. Second place, yeah, these guys are pretty quick.
And there are the fans that get the team that is predicted high, and they go, no, don't do that. Don't curse them. Don't. I remember going to 7-Elevens and picking up the Hockey News when it was a paper.
Yeah,
and going through it until the guy at the counter would say, you going to buy that? And I'd be like, oh, no, I can't afford the Hockey News, but thank you. Mike Modano was on the cover back then when he came out of PA. So Matt Larkin's going to join us from the Hockey News at the top of the hour. Yesterday, gentlemen, Milos Raonic and Roger Federer went at it in the quarterfinals. We talked about it a little bit, Brandon, just the fact that we thought Milos should win this, but, you know, we always cheer for Federer. It wasn't much of a match. It's not surprising to me that Milos lost. It's the fashion in which he lost. Like, Federer just handled his serve pretty well.
Everything Federer. Federer was just wicked on top of everything yesterday. The level of precision, some of the shots he was making were just absolutely ridiculous. And it was interesting, super interesting, listening to Raonic after the match just kind of shrug his shoulders and say, hey, there's nothing, you know, sometimes you can't do anything when your opponent's playing at the level that he was. yesterday, and Federer is just tapped in. Mark Masters asked him, what part of his game do you think is better? And he was like, well, I don't know physically that he's any better, but it just seems like he's mentally that much more razor sharp. The shots he was hitting, some of the passing shots were just ridiculous and borderline impossible. Federer seems like an unstoppable train this year.
Yeah. You know, he didn't shrug his shoulders only after the match. He was doing it during the match. Mm-hmm.
And even like the giving like a finger up, like, yeah, like, that was a hell of a shot. Like, I had no chance at it.
So many times we like to place blame on the loser, whether it's a single player or a team. But if you watch that match, I mean, I don't know if two Milos Raonic's would have beat Federer in that one. He was out of his mind good. And it all kind of culminated in that shot where Raonic pointed his finger at him.
Yeah.
Where Raonic hits a perfect backhand volley right on the line, and Federer sprints from side to side and somehow curls it in just on the outside of the line. There's no way, barring some kind of a slip on the grass court or some kind of freak injury, there's no way you're beating Roger Federer right now. He's lost one set so far this tournament en route to the semifinals, and with the big dogs out, mainly due to injury, I don't know. I think Raonic was kind of his last obstacle,
yeah,
and he handled that like it was some wild card entry into the tournament.
Good for Roger Federer, bad for Milos Raonic, but it's always, as his career goes on, it's always interesting to take it in and see where he can go and if he can get another title under his belt. Round two of McGregor Mayweather was in Toronto yesterday. Two things stood out to me, gentlemen. The one is how hated Mayweather is outside of his own country. Was not very popular, and his persona and who he is out of the boxing ring comes to the forefront when he's not in the U.S., I think. The other thing was, I love the quote from this press conference in L.A., when Mayweather said, it doesn't matter, octagon ring, and McGregor said, it does matter, or we'd be in the octagon, or we'd be doing it right here, so it does matter to you. The one yesterday that stood out to me was Mayweather actually told McGregor, if you're so confident in yourself, bet your payday check on yourself.
And what did McGregor say?
McGregor said, no problem, bring the contract.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What did you think of yesterday? Is it getting crazy?
Well, it's pure gong show. There's no doubt about that. And I'm not sure how many more stops are on this tour.
Two more.
So it'll likely just kind of gain momentum in that manner. The one thing that I would ask I'm curious about a little bit, and it seems to just sort of be the world we live in at this point in time, where the amount of vulgarity during it is a little bit over the top to me. Like, I understand it all, but I think you could still put on a fantastic show without being so lewd, basically, nonstop. You really can't have kids anywhere near it. I don't know how many kids maybe were in that group watching and that sort of thing. And it's just a little over the top in that manner. But I do, and a big part of me wonders how much of what you witness as far as the emotion and the feelings toward one another is real, and I think a bunch of it is real in that manner. But thankfully, August 26th isn't all that far away, and even yesterday still, getting into real good debates with people about Conor McGregor having much more of a chance than anybody thinks, and I still maintain that. It's going to be a spectacle, a fascinating thing. It blows me away, the individuals that latch onto hatred of the entire notion of this fight, and that's it. That's where they are. They're not moving from it.
Well, yesterday was so staged and contrived and just solely used for amping up the entertainment value of the spectacle upcoming. And I think, like, only real saps will fall for this, and I am slowly becoming one. Like, it's working. It's 100% work. Like, I was watching it yesterday, and I just couldn't help myself thinking, "Oh my gosh, I'm going to drop $100 on this stupid event." It's getting to that point. Whatever you think about it, it's working. Like, they are nailing every aspect of it so far. And it led off SportsCenter last night this morning. So tell me the last time any kind of fighting event it at any level ever led off a sports center here in Canada.
I was going to watch this
pre-fight.
I am going to watch it, but it's starting to get annoying to me the opposite way. Like, watching yesterday, it was all staged. It was just to fire up the crowd, and it was – and, like, it wasn't interviews. It wasn't – and if it gets out of hand, I'm okay with that. But yesterday's over the top. The next two are probably going to annoy me even more. But I do love the quotes and the bravado.
I don't think it's all staged, because I don't think McGregor saying you can't even read – I don't think Mayweather would be too much of a fan of that type of statement.
No, but the stage part of it to me is we're going to put you two out there, and then we're going to each give you 5 minutes, mm-hmm. and then you just go at each other, and this is what we're – we'll discuss this as well and get your thoughts on Boss Pete's fan line. Matt Larkin's next on The Big Show.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
TSN 1290 and the Walt Morris Group of Companies, including Winnipeg Dodge, present the first ever TSN 1290 Golfer Kids Classic, Tuesday, August 15th at Southwood Golf and Country Club. This is a Texas Scramble Best Ball Tournament with proceeds to benefit the Children's Hospital Foundation of Manitoba and Kidsport Manitoba. Registration is $150 per person or $500 per foursome. It has everything that an 18-hole golf tournament includes. Golf cart rental, pre and post game buffet, freebies plus chances to win cool prizes. There'll also be a ton of fun at select holes, courtesy of our good friends at Royal Sports, The Pint Winnipeg, J&M Window and Door Company, Santa Lucia Pizza, Darcy Bain Physiotherapy, Windeck Limited, Ashley Furniture, Mr. Lube, FXR Adrenaline Unlimited, Viscount Gord Hotel, and the United Firefighters of Winnipeg, Local 867. Space is limited. There are a few spots left. So by all means, it's a first-come, first-served basis. Register now at tsn1290.ca. This is The Big Show on the Royal Sports Power Hour. Jim Tolt, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki. 6 minutes past the hour, and we're going to talk some hockey now on a Minuke Dencher Blue Bomber game day as the Argos are in town. Mr. Matt Larkin from the Hockey News joins us. How are you, Matt?
I'm good. How you doing?
Doing very well. Let's start it off. You called your shot. You Babe Ruthed your shot on the Steve Mason of Winnipeg months ago right here on this program. Your thoughts on the signing of Steve Mason and Dmitry Kulikov for the Jets?
Well, I did. I Babe Ruthed it. It doesn't mean I feel great about it. And it's more it's the money that Steve Mason got. If Steve Mason got what, let's say, Jonathan Bernier got in Colorado or what Ryan Miller got in Anaheim, a couple $1 million, I'd say, okay, this is an apprenticeship. He's going to mentor Connor Hellebuck. Great. When you're paying Steve Mason $4.1 million, it's pretty clear he's being paid to start. And it's a big vote of non-confidence for Connor Hellebuck. And as a starting goaltender, Steve Mason, I personally found him to be pretty overrated. He's got a lot of mileage over the Calder Trophy run he had in 2009, where he had the 10 shutouts, had an amazing year. But he's been very up and down in his career. He had a couple good years in Philadelphia, but usually he's below average in save percentage. So I don't know if this is going to be an upgrade for the Jets in goal. Yes, he's a veteran, and he can sort of teach Connor how to be a pro, but other than that, I'm not crazy about the signing. And Dmitry Kulikov, again, it's the money. I thought he was a good sleeper for a team to sign this offseason. He's still only at 26 years old. He's been injury-prone, but he's still young enough to bounce back from that, and he has the upside to be a top-four guy. He's gritty. But again, when you're paying him north of $4 million, you're not really getting a value there. You're paying full value for a guy who's coming off a bad year. So I'm not crazy about it either from a financial standpoint.
Is that what we would call the Winnipeg issue, the money?
I mean, it's being talked about a lot, right, in Edmonton as well. And it's I know it's insulting to the market, but it's something that people say. I guess, you know, you have to overpay because you're in a market that's sort of further away from the rest of the North American teams where you have a cluster, you know, where the Metropolitan Division is or the Atlantic Division or down in California. So geographically, I guess it is a more obscure market and the winters can be harsh. So, yeah, I mean, it does seem to be a legit thing that happens in the game.
I like how you sort of gentled that up a little bit with the winters can be harsh. One of my favorite publication of the year, it's kind of like a Bible for me, is the Hockey News Yearbook, man. And you guys must have been working on it. We all here saw your tweet a couple days ago with the doing your 2017-18 predictions and that the central standings, hammering them out, took longer than all the other three divisions combined. I know you probably can't give us all the dirt and all the info, but please talk to us a little bit in trying to make your picks with the central.
sure. I mean, my goodness, it was impossible to figure it out. We literally were sitting there scratching our heads, just staring at our whiteboard. We had the other divisions worked out pretty easily, but the Central, I think almost every guy in the room, there was a different representative saying that one of the teams was going to win the division. I think every team except for, of course, Colorado. I'm still on the Nashville train. I think that team is just getting started. You've got four, you know, arguably the best top four defense corps in the NHL. They're all in their mid-20s, and you've got two 31-goal scorers, Victor Arvidsson and Philip Forsberg, who are also just getting started. They're young guys. So I think that team's going to be competitive for a long time. But, of course, I mean, the Dallas Stars have emerged as a power now because they were the busiest team in the offseason. They had the biggest splash. You got Radulov, Ben Bishop, Mark Lafont, Martin Hansel, and they're just 2 years removed from winning the Central Division. So, of course, the Stars are looking like a power that's going to really bounce back this year as well. You got Ken Hitchcock coaching the team now, too. And, I mean, you have other teams that are on the bubble, like the St. Louis Blues. They, you know, started slowly last year. They had a good run down the stretch with Mike Yeo. They're a team that sort of divided the room, I think. And Minnesota's another team that divided the room. Some people think they're an old team that overachieved last year. Other people were big fans of Bruce Boudreau. And, you know, despite his playoff failings, he's always good in the regular season. He's won 8 division titles in 10 years. And, of course, you know, there's Chicago. I think the confidence in Chicago is starting to wane a little bit because they did lose a lot of guys in the offseason, right? You lose Nicholas Chalmerson, Marcus Kruger, Trevor Van Riemsdyk. You lose Artemi Panarin. You do get Brandon Saad, but Panarin's still a big guy to lose. You lose Marian Hossa as well. So I do think the Hawks are going to have a tougher time winning that division this year. And last but not least, I purposely saved them for you guys, the Winnipeg Jets. And again, the Jets have really divided the room because I don't know if you guys remember the hockey news. We picked the Jets, and a couple of years ago, we anointed them the 2019 Stanley Cup champions. Because they've got all that young talent. You've got Mark Scheifele, Patrick Laine, Jacob Trouba, Josh Morris, he's finally finding himself. You've got Kyle Connor on the way, Logan Stanley on the way. I mean, the Jets every year, in theory, they look amazing on paper and waiting for the breakout. And personally, I've been a guy who's backed them so many years, but I think they've kind of hurt me. They've stung me. So I'm kind of entering prove-it mode with this team, and I'm almost tired of saying they're going to be good. I want to see them start winning. And to me, the concern is coaching. I mean, I've said it before on this show, Paul Maurice, 19 seasons, 5 playoff berths. So I'm starting to wonder if his leash should get a bit shorter.
Can they make the playoffs in your mind, Matt? Like, I know you sort of alluded to it, and I don't want to give away what's coming out in the hockey news, but like, given the division and everything we just talked about, is there the potential there for them to get in this season?
Well, I'll quote Patrick Laine. I talked to Patrick Laine a couple weeks ago at the awards, and he said, we have to stop winning games by scoring 3 or 4 goals, and we have to allow a lot fewer goals. If Winnipeg does that, then absolutely they can make the playoffs. But if they don't improve that porous defensive game and they don't improve their special teams, which seem to be bad every year, I don't see them passing that top 5 in the Central. And, of course, in the Pacific is still pretty competitive as well. I think you got Edmonton, Calgary, Anaheim that are going to be in the playoffs for sure. And then for crossover, you know, you've got San Jose possibly. I do think it's going to be 5 Central teams this year that make the playoffs. And Winnipeg can be one of them, especially because the Jets are going to score. I think the Jets are going to be one of the highest scoring teams in the league this year. But it's just a matter of, you know, is their goaltending truly improved? It's got to be better this year. And can they improve on the defensive side of the puck in general?
Tell me how much of a stud you think Jacob Slavin is and this contract here with the Canes.
Oh, I love this guy. And I've been pretty open about it on Twitter. Only 2 people gave him a Norris Trophy vote, a 5th-place vote, and I was one of them. And I'm proud to say it. I think he's sort of an unknown star, and there's a lot of talk on that Carolina blue line, of course. Noah Hanifin and Justin Falk gets the flashy goal totals. But if you look at the analytics, Jacob Slavin, he's a shutdown guy, even though, to me, what impresses me, he's not just a shutdown guy. He's a shutdown guy despite the fact that he plays against elite competition. He has very tough quality of competition, and he and Brett Pesce have emerged as the top pair in Carolina and one of the best defensive pairs in the league. And especially when you look at what Dmitry Orlov just got in Washington, which is roughly the same amount of money, it kind of blows my mind that Slavin is getting the same because Slavin has a much bigger impact on the game right now. And I think kind of like Roman Josi's contract a couple of years ago in Nashville, when he signed that, people said, that looks like it's going to be a steal. And of course it was. And I think that's going to be the same for Slavin. We'll be saying the same thing even within the next year.
Matt Larkin of the Hockey News joining us on the Big Show this morning, TSN 1290. It's 14 minutes past the hour. It's going to be nice out today, so no rain like yesterday. Matt Duchene, where's he going? Is he going? What's going on?
Oh, boy, it's tough, right? I mean, as the summer drags out and it seems like Joe Sakic's not happy with the offers, before it seemed like the teams were not happy with what Joe Sakic's asking price was, it seems less likely he's going to get moved. But I still think that it's going to happen in some way. And Columbus is the team that's repeatedly linked to Duchene. They could use another guy they could put in as a first line or second line center. I mean, they've got Alexander Wenberg, and Pierre-Luc Dubois has got the ceiling to be a Vincent Lecavalier type of player, but he's not 100% guaranteed to arrive just yet. He's still in junior. He hasn't played pro hockey yet. So, and this is the team that's ready to win now, of course, right? They have one of the best records in the NHL. They want to contend for a Stanley Cup. They want to beat Pittsburgh. And Duchene would bring a lot of speed to the table. He can play the left wing or center. He's a good fit for them. But the sticking point is, you know, that they reportedly offered Ryan Murray, and Joe Sakic, rightfully so, says, no, we want a higher-end player, higher-end prospect, and Colorado wants a defenseman. So I think it's going to involve Gabriel Carlson, the first-round pick, one of Columbus's best prospects, if that trade's going to happen. And they're the team to watch. And from a hockey standpoint, I mean, a team like Boston, I still think could really use Matt Duchene, especially a team like L.A., who really needs some speed. And lastly, Carolina. Carolina's got a huge surplus of defensemen, and they might be the actual best fit just from a pure common-sense standpoint. Carolina can totally spare one of their guys, and what they really need is a first-line center. So I love the fit there.
Why do you think Jágr's still unsigned?
I just don't know. I mean, we talked about it on our podcast this week, and my only theory is that teams are trying to wait him out. And my colleague Ken Campbell said, you know, what if Jaromir Jágr has to put his tail between his legs and attend a PTO tryout in September? I think teams maybe are hoping he starts to worry about that, and maybe they drag things out to August, and $1 million drops off his asking price, and maybe a team can get him for a couple mil and sign him in August. I do think it's going to happen, though.
Do you think you know where? Or?
I mean, I think the Nashville Predators would be a nice fit because they just lost James Neal, and we know they're ready to compete right now. They were so close to winning the Stanley Cup. So I think Jágr would be a cool fit there. And I think as someone who seems to be a fun-loving guy, I mean, Nashville would be a fun market for him to play in. From a pure hockey standpoint, I think the perfect fit for him is Calgary, because the Flames, they need another good right winger for their top six who can play with Johnny Gaudreau and Sean Monahan. And Jágr would fit. He really would. And we know he can play on a young line. He doesn't have to be the fast guy because he's proven that with Barkov and Huberdeau in Florida. He made great magic with them. The only problem is I don't see Jágr as the type of guy that's going to want to go and play in that market because he seems like he wants to play in more of a, I don't know, cosmopolitan or entertainment-based market. You know, New York and Florida, places like that, New Jersey, close to New York as well. So I don't see him going there, but it's too bad because I think he'd be an amazing fit.
Finally, Matt, what did you think of the team the Golden Knights put together? Because I was a little bit surprised of everything I was hearing and reading leading up to the expansion draft. And then when I saw it personally, I felt like McPhee just did a whole bunch of GMs a whole bunch of favors.
Yes, I think you're right. And when they signed Kachuk from the KHL for more than $4 million, I thought, okay, well, maybe they're going to try to be competitive. But once that expansion draft was done, I looked at the roster. I said, oh, okay, I see what this is about. And I really think what they're doing is they've looked at Edmonton and Toronto, and they see, okay, well, these teams were in tank mode for a long time, and look what they've built now, and now all of a sudden they're looking like they're emerging as contenders. We want to do the same thing. We want to win some lotteries. We want to amass a bunch of high-end first-round picks, which makes sense in theory. The only problem is that people sometimes forget that 2015 and 2016 don't come around all the time. The McDavid and Matthews years, those were generational talents. And case in point, this year, you've got Nico Hischier and Nolan Patrick, whose ceiling, they're not anywhere close to what McDavid and Matthews are. So the Golden Knights, yes, they're tanking, but it doesn't mean they're going to get that generational superstar, because we don't know that we're going to get one in the next few years. There's talk of, you know, Andrei Svechnikov is probably going to be the guy next year. But again, he does not rate in the same tier as Matthews and McDavid. Those guys we were talking about since they were 14 years old, and they were always going to be the next sort of Crosby, Ovechkin successors. So that's a bit of a risky move for Vegas, I think.
Great stuff, Matt. We appreciate it as always. Enjoy your weekend.
Pleasure, fellas.
Thanks so much, man.
Matt Larkin from the Hockey News once again, and that's coming out weekly. Always a great read. Make sure you take that in. We'll take a break, and when we come back, more on the Royal Sports Power Hour on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Pick up your official TSN 1290 discount card today. Hit the green show at the summer with great 2-for-1 deals at a multitude of Manitoba golf courses, including Kingswood Golf and Country Club, Scottswood Links Golf Course, Leverande Golf Course, Bell Acres Golf and Country Club, Steinbeck Flying Golf Club, and Winkler Centennial Golf Course, just to name a few. Book a tee time and show your card for great rates. Cards are only $34.95 each. Some restrictions apply. To purchase your card and for a complete list of participating courses, visit TSN1290.ca. I was going to talk about the ESPYs here, gentlemen, and some of the awards handed out and whether you agreed with them. But we're talking about this Slavin contract, 7 years, $5.3 million. Like him better than Hanifin?
Well, he's an absolute stud. That's the bottom line. That's period, right? Great size, like points, everything. Everything across the board, he is a stud.
Yeah, I don't really have to think about it too long, to be honest with you. I'll take Slavin all day long. Not that Hanifin can't be somewhere near that, but if you have a stud number one D-man compared to a guy who could be, give me the lockdown any day of the week. I think Hanifin will be a great player, but Slavin has been... now that he's signed the contract, he will not be an under-the-radar guy any longer. He's been lights out for Carolina, not just last year, but really 2 years now. And there's not really a lot of holes in his game. And it just, kind of the victim of playing in the market that the Hurricanes are in and the fact that they haven't been a good team for a while now.
So would you trade him for Nick Ehlers? And vice versa?
That's a question we asked.
And vice versa, if you're the Jets and you need a guy.
And you're talking about, you're assuming that Trouba is going to stay here.
Yes.
Your top pairing, and with Slavin moving in with Trouba, like you go Slavin, Trouba, that's Suter-Weber-ish.
Suter-Weber,
yeah. So for the next 8-10 years, you're set, your top pairing. As much as I love Ehlers...
Left-handed shot, 23 years old, and his AAV is going to be 5.3 mil for the next 7 years.
Yeah, and it's real easy to imagine him getting up to about a half a point a game. And he's just solid across the board. I'm going to say yes, I would.
You would. You love Ehlers.
Super reluctantly. But I got the best. I have one of the top five defensive pairings for the next 8-10 years. Or how long? How many years he got in his contract?
Seven years. So he'll be 30 when this contract.
That's pretty
runs
good.
Out.
And so long as I know Trouba wants to be here, either way, really, you land an absolute beast.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't really think it's a viable trade or a feasible one, to
that's
be
not
honest
what
with
we're
you.
Asking.
Yeah, fair enough. Because the Hurricanes, you don't sign a guy to a 7-year deal and trade him the next year, right? Like you obviously.
Well, you do. Like that's what they're going to have to do with Ehlers. And if what's Ehlers going to get?
Why would Carolina trade Slavin though?
If they want offensive help,
they want Nick
Ehlers. Oh, you got Noah Hanifin to dangle. I don't know why it. Anyways, that's a different conversation.
Take it this way: say Hanifin's offered, and they go no, but we'll give you Ehlers for Slavin,
and they'll say we just signed him to a 7-year deal,
and we just signed Nick Ehlers to a 7-year, 5.5 deal.
I would say show me teams that sign guys to 7-8 year deals and pony up 30-40 million and then trade them immediately. I just don't think that exists. But regardless of that, I don't know. I don't know if I do, to be honest with you. Not that it's not fair value or anything like that. I don't know. I'm a big Nikolaj Ehlers fan, and I think as good as that's a tough one. I have to give me a few more segments on this one.
Well, we'll come back to it in NHL News and Notes later on in this hour. They actually have him for the next 8 years because he's still on his entry-level contract next year.
And Ehlers has a real good chance to be a point-a-game guy. Huh?
That's what I was going to go
real
with.
Good chance.
But that's a tough one.
You think Ehlers is going to become an 82-point
I think he's got a real solid chance, and with the majority of those being assist, I think he's just that beautiful of a playmaker.
The next question would be then, what do you think Kyle Connor's going to be? And if Kyle Connor can equal that, then the reason we bring this up and we debate it is because Carolina's depth is D. Winnipeg's depth is scoring forwards. It's interesting. We'll come back to it in NHL News and Notes. We're going to hear from Sidney Crosby next and his thoughts on concussions and the offseason. That's coming up on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290. Yes, we got it, guys!
TSN 1290 is proud to support the fifth and final HSC Foundation Celebrity Human Race. It's your chance to race around Winnipeg, competing in challenges and puzzles with your team's celebrities September 22nd and 23rd. The money raised allows the HSC Foundation to improve care for Manitoba families with research initiatives, cutting-edge medical equipment, state-of-the-art facilities. To learn more or to register, visit tsn1290.ca. This next segment on The Big Show is a presentation of Johnson Waste Management. Jim Tolf, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you. On the Royal Sports Power Hour, 33 minutes past the hour. Still lots to come on the Blue Bomber and Argos game today. Chris Schultz at 8, Jeff Hamilton at 8:30. We're going to delve more into the COP contract for the Winnipeg Jets and, of course, have an hour of your phone calls and your thoughts on everything we're talking about today on the Boss Pizza Fan Line. Starting at 9 o'clock. Yesterday, gentlemen, Sidney Crosby's back home taking a part in fundraisers. I think he made a generous $50,000 donation to the Kids Sport back in his hometown. And he was asked about concussions. And he was asked about how he feels about it from where his first one was. And he talked about them and how he's been listening to his body and how far it's come in the 7 years since he suffered his first one. Here's Sidney Crosby.
It's a hot topic. I mean, that's the nature of it right now, and there's more and more information about concussions, but I think depending on the case and severity, there are ways to make sure you recover and get better, and I think that you just have to be smart with it, but I think with each year that passes, there's more and more information, and I think it's something that's good for everyone. There's just more tests. There's more ways of diagnosing than there was, 7 years ago. That's just because we know more about them, and they become something that's talked about even more. So, with that attention, with that education, it's just awareness, and I think that's allowed everyone to kind of to learn a little bit more. The more time that goes by, the more you learn about it. When you have gone through it, I think you try to learn as much as you can and how you respond and things to look for. And I think going back to when I got my first one, there wasn't a lot of, there wasn't a protocol. There wasn't a lot of information out there as far as how to handle them. There's such a tough injury as far as symptoms and things like that. Everybody's different. So, I would say that just everybody's continued to educate themselves. And I think as players, we've become more educated, and you have to listen to your body at the end of the day, and there's things in place to help you with that. But I think from my experience, obviously that first one was probably the worst one in severity, but you have to continue to kind of listen to your body and make sure that before you go back, you're good to go, and there's things in place to help with that.
Of course, suffered another concussion in these playoffs, returned, and we
Remember the timeline, too, right?
It.
Played Monday night, suffered the concussion. Tuesday, the organization, Mike Sullivan, announces he has a concussion. I believe he was skating again Thursday, Friday, played Saturday. And that was a huge uproar. It's such an interesting time that we live in with this specific injury, boys. And ultimately, you know, what I believe in, like, is, and for me, like, it's a huge thing. All the contact sports, and maybe with the two most popular being hockey and football, so much continues to develop with this. But ultimately, what I would like to see, I think, from a professional standpoint, is to allow the players to decide they want to keep playing or not.
Really?
You know, like, to let them sign off on a waiver. Hey, do you want to play? Like, you take it into your own hands. I just, there's a big chunk of me that's what ultimately that I would like to let the players decide.
Because weren't you on board when we discussed this and throughout the year with they shouldn't be? Like, they.
Well, with the way the leagues are going, that, you know, the concussion protocols that are in place and how the leagues are trying to seemingly keep guys off the field or the ice that have it. Yeah, but as a player, like, if I was playing, I would want this decision. It's up to me. And even with all the protocol in place and stuff, it's still sneakily up to the player for me to say, I feel this, I feel that. If I don't say that to you, you can't tell what I'm feeling. Right? But and as an adult, and you're getting paid, the same way that it's my decision if I've got other ailments and things of that nature, if I want to try and battle through them, if my play doesn't fall off and all the rest, if I'm not hurting the team out there, I'm still contributing. It's typically up to the player if he wants to play or he or she wants to play or not, and I think in a lot of ways it should be up to the player if they wish to play.
Yeah, and I disagree with that. I think these guys need to be protected from themselves. And they are kind of protected from themselves already, right? Where how many of these guys would be wearing visors right now if they weren't grandfathered
That's
in?
That's a fair point, yeah.
Right?
And helmets.
there'd probably be a few guys without helmets right now, too. And it seems like such an elementary thing, right? Like, why wouldn't you have something protecting your eyes and your, you know, parts of your face, at least for the most part? Yet a lot of these players wouldn't be doing that right now. And like, we know a lot more about concussions than we have in the past, but how in the dark are we when it comes to these things still?
Big time.
Right? Yeah. And when it comes to the NFL even, you know, people say that, you know, these guys generally know what they're getting into. They don't. I don't think they do still.
Well,
and you're seeing way too many people when it comes to once their careers end, kill themselves because they can't deal with the pain.
But isn't that so? Don't you know what you're getting into? That you might take you to a place of real darkness from a mental, emotional standpoint like that. People know what the end.
The one thing you can't teach people or educate them about is what your thought process and feelings or things are going to be 40 years down the road. We all evolve. We all mature. I've been accused of not maturing fast enough.
Can know. Like, I can know as a young football player right now, if I'm getting into the game and I see guys that are dealing with things at a level that they, if it is that they're, you know, struggling with things so much that they're taking their own lives and very, really unhealthy and all the rest of it, I know dang well what I'm getting into, don't I?
Well, Troy, what I'm trying to say, if you're a 20, 21-year-old kid coming out of the NCAA and you're a top 3-round pick in the NFL, I agree with you. There's not one of them that don't know what's going on with these guys who are committing suicide at 50 and 45 and 55. But how you approach that thought process and the risk of it to a 20-year-old is going to be much different when you're 50. If you're 50 and played 8 years in the league and have headaches but also started a successful business off the money you made and became whatever, a lawyer or maybe just own a corner store, when you're 50, you look back on it, you go, man, I should have probably just done this at 20 as opposed to played those 8 years. But when you're 20, you're not going to think that way, despite the education and the knowledge that's there. And that's the issue to me is, you're not going to think the same way going into these leagues as you are 40 years later. Whether you're in a league or not, we don't think that way as humans. How I approach life at my age now is way different than what I thought at 20 and 22.
Yeah, I don't deny that. I just wonder at what point in time, as an adult, inheriting the risk to play sports, there is a gray line there, because ultimately still with concussions, until something's devised that can measure what exactly happened to my brain, if it ever does happen, the best read I believe the doctors have is what they get from me, and I can still hide it like crazy to you. It's a remarkable thing. And I know now in contact sports, now more than ever, athletes are hiding the fact that they are dinged up or they have had their bell rung in quotations, right? Because players don't, whether you're talking about high school kids or pros, they don't want to come out of the game. Still much more so than they're willing to admit that they feel nauseous, feel dizzy, those types of things.
And that's why I'm surprised to hear you say, like, it should be up to the player
now. I would still want it up to – if I was a player playing today, knowing and hearing all these things that happen to guys, I would still not tell the doctor if I was nauseous or dizzy or anything like that. I would still want to play, and ultimately it's going to be up to me whether or not I want to play. I want it to be up to me as an adult as to whether or not I can play or not. I do understand when things come into effect, whether it's in the society that we live in with regard to seatbelts, right? When things are taken, you have to do things to keep yourself safe. And same thing with hockey and visors, that sort of thing in hockey. But as much as possible, as an athlete, I want to maintain as much control over whether or not I want to play, and if I'm willing to inherit certain risks. You know, that's kind of what Jason Cole talks about when we talk to him. Hey, however you want to live your life, how risky do you want to live your life? Do you want to go try climb Everest and all these other sorts of things? What are you willing to inherit as far as risk goes? And as an adult playing a pro sport, I want to maintain as much control over that as possible.
Yeah, yeah, and I do get that aspect of it too, right? And to be honest, if I was, I mean, regular season might be different, but Stanley Cup playoff game, I hit my head on the ice or whatever happens, and I know I'm in trouble, I'm probably telling the trainer everything's fine too, which is why I would want the league to protect me from myself, right? Like you can't even trust athletes in high competitive situations to use their best judgment, right? Because it's almost ingrained into you from a young age that you don't leave the ice, you don't leave this. It's kind of tough to turn off that warrior mentality midway through a game or midway through a session because it's been basically beat into you.
Well, I don't think beat into you. I think it's much more instinctive. In a competitor's, like, you, the people that are playing high level sports have it in their spirit and soul, that level of competition, that someone that doesn't have it doesn't understand it. And I think that's one of the reasons why an individual is operating at such a high level.
Well, those guys in that lawsuit right now against the NHL and the fighters, like, I sit here and I go, if you felt this way, why did you keep going out there? And they all said because of the pressure that was put on them to play, the warrior mentality that was taught to them to play.
And a lot of those guys, too, aren't making $6-7 million,
no.
Right? Like, a lot of those guys were making the league minimum, and which is a lot more than the majority of people make in the world. I understand that. But, you know, a lot of them had hockey as their only job, and that was all they could do. So there was the pressure of, like, I got to keep doing this, or what am I going to do for the rest of my life if I'm not a hockey player?
I fully agree with you when you say that. I'm just surprised you said it. I think it's up to the athlete. And I said that with the Sidney Crosby thing. And I was just as shocked as everybody else and you guys that he was back in the playoffs so soon. But then I sort of sat down, and what Sidney's saying there is, I'm like, well, who else knows better? I don't know what his doctor said to him. I don't know what he said to the doctors, and I don't know how he's feeling. But we discussed the whole, would you risk Sidney Crosby, you know, his future at this? Would you do it team-wise? We covered all the angles on this. And what I kept coming back to is, this isn't his first one. He knows how he feels. He clearly knows what's at risk because he's been through this. And we all have talked about the repercussions. And I agreed at the time, and I agree with him now. It's up to him and how he feels and how he does it. Now, it could be different if 20 years from now he goes, wait a minute, this isn't right, and I have these lasting effects and blah, blah, blah. But I still think it's his decision at the time, all under the guidance of the medical teams and knowledge that they have now.
And that, to me, like if I, as a 25- or 30-year-old, make the decision to play and battle through these types of things, that, to me, removes my right as a 50-year-old to come back and sort of cry wolf or, you know, blame the league for this and that, if I know damn well the ramifications of the decisions that I have to own and that sort of thing. But my perspective, I can have an opinion on this as a player and then remove myself from that and from a governing body or a league have the opposite side of it, which is when we're talking about this and the league has certain protocol and things in effect trying to get players off the field or ice. That's a much different perspective or angle I'm coming at it than from looking at it as a player wanting to be on the field or the ice. And boy, you're going to have trouble getting me off of that. And I'm going to lie. I'm going to look a doctor or a trainer right in the eye and I'm going to lie to them. No question about that.
It's an interesting topic, interesting words from Sidney Crosby as he commented about the concussions he's had and where it's at right now. We'll get your thoughts on that as well on the Boss Pizza Fan Line. NHL news and notes are next, however, on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Our previous segment was a presentation of Johnson Waste Management, a Winnipeg-run family business doing their best to be the very best. This is The Big Show on TSN and TSN 1290. And of course, you can stream us on the iHeartRadio app and all your favorite devices. Get a customized playlist to suit your mood or activity. Your music, your stations, always free. Download the iHeartRadio app today and stream on. News came out yesterday after we went off the air that the Carolina Hurricanes have signed Jacob Slavin to a seven-year $5.3 million contract, or a seven-year contract, which AAV is $5.3 million per. He's 23 years old. He's a left-handed shot. We talked about what you would get for him in a trade and if it would be Ehlers. We may touch on that again before this segment's out. But right now, gentlemen, what does this do to Jacob Trouba's contract if Slavin gets 7 years at 5.3 as a 23-year-old? More, less?
I think Slavin got fleeced. I think his agent, like, what are you guys doing?
Trouba's 23 years old as well. He's played in the league for 4 years now. Slavin's 23 years old. He's played in the league 2 years. He spent 14 games with the Charlotte Checkers in the AHL. Had 7 assists before playing 63 with Carolina the rest of the season. He came out of Colorado College. He spent 2 years there.
This is, for a defenseman, this is along the lines of the Scheifele contract where you look at it, and in a year or two, you're going to look at that and go, whew, that player, the agent, they made a mistake. They're getting way underpaid.
But you know what? Like, it has to fit. And that's why I said, like, a couple weeks ago, why doesn't Trouba just sign? Because the money's going to be the money. And then keep asking for a trade. So you get paid. Who knows if you break your leg or whatever in 2 years from now, but
that's such a kooky suggestion by you, I think. Like, as a player to, hey, sign the deal and just put it on the organization in good faith to trade you.
But, Troy, you're thinking that he's going to get $9 million in 3 years from now.
I never once
said
$8
million.
That.
How much?
I don't know. He's going to get paid.
So my point with this contract is they're the same age. They're of equal talent, and he's taken 5-3. The idea of, like, the Dustin Byfuglien contract of $7.6 million when you're 30, I don't think happens anymore for defensemen. I think the age you get that...
So then that's a bad contract?
It could eventually be, yeah.
Hmm. Okay.
But so my point is Slavin worth $7 or $8 million? He won't find out till he's 31 years old now. Mm. And is he going to get it then?
No, I think you would know that. You'll know that in a year or two.
Okay, fair enough. But he's not going to make that.
Mm-hmm. Right? That's, you just reinforced my initial point.
So it has to fit.
Has to fit with...
On a team. On a team, it has to fit.
It'll fit somewhere.
In Colorado, who's got room. In Vegas, who's got room.
It'll fit somewhere. That's my only point. You're not going to get players... Players, fair market value, right? That's one of the most basic understandings in economics.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, if the dude's happy in Carolina, then it's a great deal for him, right? But there's no doubt that financially, he probably leaves, I would say, at least $10 million on the table here. Because, I mean, they could assign him to a seven-year, $6 million deal, and I wouldn't bat an eye at it and think that's still pretty fair for the Hurricanes here, but
700K more. It's not the $8 million that Doughty and it's not the $9 million PK's getting.
But if he really believed in himself and if he was really pushing the money here, you know, I would play another year of the deal. You know, or play another year because
or
you said
he has 2 years. Yeah.
He has one more year left
he
on
has
his
one more year on his entry level contract that pays him $742,500. Then in 2018-19, 7 years at 5.3 kick in.
So he's doing the Canes a big time
huge favor.
Thank you here because yeah. if he wanted to, he's fully within his rights to play out his contract without the extension, and if he plays another year and just kind of accrues another year of top level play, he's looking at 7x7 at the minimum, I think. So Carolina comes out like bandits in this. There's no doubt about that, and you know, you're kind of seeing, I think, maybe how the Jets and Trouba are going to play out in a different manner here, where even if Jacob wants to stay here, if that's the case, he's grabbing another year of play, another year of service towards his deal, and 7x5.3 is not even going to be a starting point, I think, when he comes to the negotiating table.
Look at Kevin Shattenkirk, though. Everybody thought he was going to be the next $9 million defenseman, $8 million defenseman. He gets six for 4 years, and he's 28 years old.
I don't remember anybody saying, at 28 years old?
My point is, yeah.
No.
He didn't go to Tampa Bay and refuse a $7 million a year, seven-year contract because he wanted to go to free agency. He nullified that trade with his no-trade move, wanted to go to New York. My point is the Drew Doughty $8 million a year, the PK Subban $9 million a year. I agree with you guys. If he held out, he could get more. But there's only a select few teams under the cap that can do an $8 or $9 million hit per player. And I don't know if you're going to do it for defensemen anymore because it seems to be going the route of the, you know, like
just
even
wait
Shifley
till,
at
just wait till
price.
Mr. Carlson hits the free market. See what Carlson signs for.
What do you think he's going to sign for in Ottawa?
Whatever he wants.
It starts with a one.
But it's got to fit.
Well,
like if he sits
that's
down
like
and
saying,
goes, I want 13.
That's like saying McDavid had to fit.
And McDavid did have to fit. And he literally took less to make it fit. That's my point.
A little bit less. Like 12 in a... I don't know if $12 million is necessarily making it fit. I think if Eric Carlson goes to the market...
If he asks
and a
for
team,
14, they don't have to give it
if
to
he,
him.
If he asks for 14, they better damn well give it to him. Or you're gonna let McDavid...
No, I mean McDavid.
No,
McDavid
I know.
If McDavid asks for 14, they're not going to give it to him?
No, they'd give it to him.
Well, that's my point.
But he's giving him a bit of a discount for...
Because it has
to help
fit.
With the team. No, he's just helping the team. They would make it fit. You'd have to sign McDavid and then make everything else fit.
If Carlson goes to UFA, you will see 29, 30 teams find a way to fit 10, 11, 12 million under the cap. They'll find a way.
I think that cripples your team. How do you build around that? That's why McDavid literally took less, because he wants to win too. And that's why I think Slavin took this. Like, is he leaving $2 million per on the table 3 years from now? Probably. But
can you ask how do you build around it when you look at who's won the cup the last 2 years?
Yeah. How many defensemen and what quality of defensemen have they won the cup with the last 2 years? Well, Ian Cole, Ron Hainsey. What year
was Letang, though?
So what is Letang making?
7.3?
Yeah. Yep. So
on an older contract, like and someone that's nowhere near what Carlson is.
I understand what you're saying about him being drastically underpaid. I don't know if he is. I think it's got to fit. And if you want long-term stability and long-term money, it's not like he's not making $35 million here. Could he be making 40? Sure, but it's got to fit. And he's getting it now as a 23-year-old as opposed to waiting 2 years when maybe he has an injury or maybe he doesn't. Like, that guaranteed money means something to a 23-year-old. That's why I say Jacob should sign and continue to ask for a trade if that's what he wants. Not saying that's what he wants, but we got to take a break. We'll continue this discussion. I'll give you guys some time to rebuttal on that as well. Chris Schultz is up next, though, on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Our province is packed with shining stars in the world of sports. Every week, TSN 1290 would like to showcase and reward these individuals who are making a big impact and difference in what they do. Nominate a Manitoban athlete, coach, or volunteer who is dedicated to making their sport matter. Every Friday on the Big Show, we'll showcase a Subway Sports Star of the Week and reward him or her with a $50 Subway gift card. Visit TSN1290.ca to nominate your sports star, and we could be featuring them soon. We'll be featuring one tomorrow on the Big Show here on TSN 1290. Jim Tolt, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you. Manuk Dencher, Blue Bomber Game Day. Bombers hosting the Toronto Argonauts tonight. 7:30 is kickoff at IGF. Manuk Dencher, Blue Bomber Game Day kicks off at 5:30 here with Troy Westwood, including host Darren Bombing and Mr. Chris Walby. Will delve more into this at 8:30 with Jeff Hamilton from the Winnipeg Free Press, too. And we'd love to know who you have in tonight's game on the Boston Pizza fan line at 9 o'clock. Head coach Mike O'Shea addressed the media yesterday, and a lot was said about the defense of the Toronto Argonauts coming in and the job they've done over three games. They're 2-1 and have 14 sacks. Here's head coach Mike O'Shea on Toronto's defense.
They've put together a nice group of guys. Their front seven seems to be playing extremely well. They get after the quarterback extremely well with rushing four a lot of times. They mix up their coverages. They mix up their pressure. They're a good football team all around, and their defense is playing really well right now.
Again, a challenge for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers with its defense. And we heard from Matt Nichols earlier in the program, gentlemen, and how to avoid that. You were coming up with your own game plan, Brandon, which may or may not work. How do you game plan against this? Are you overly concerned about this pass rush and really the front seven of the Argos defense?
We've seen Paul Appelisse be confronted with real dangerous front sevens before. Go back to Hamilton last year, who had a nasty front seven, and out of the gate early in the season, they were considered to be right there with the very best, and his play calling minimized and reduced their rush to basically nothing. Certainly, they've with the play calling, Matt Nichols, the plays, the scheming, everything involved, we've seen him basically neuter such a presence from a defensive front. I think they'll do that again here. Just work things underneath. Ball security is absolutely imperative. It has been since his arrival in the CFL for Paul Appelisse, ball security, and I've said this many times while on the show since he came back, it used to be on the walls. He would just print sheets of paper that said ball security and tape them up on doors, tape them up in the wall. You turn a corner, there'd be a sign that said ball security. I would suspect after last week, where you saw a bit of a blip into what this team typically brings to the table, including Matt Nichols, that those signs and the words were everywhere. I would be surprised to see anything but a clean sheet. I don't think we see Matt Nichols make a mistake in this game here as far as picks go. I think he has a clean sheet that way. And if the Bombers have a real quick sort of zippy offense with some sharp play calling, and Matt Nichols it also, after the disappointing, we haven't seen him play kind of at the level that we saw last week against Calgary. He hasn't really brought that to the table as the Bomber starter. I expect a real good response from him, and I do think we see the offense be much more effective and efficient in what they bring to the table. So I think they're able to take away that great strength of Toronto and that big push they got.
Well, in a weird way, it might actually help the Bombers' offense, because I think one of their greatest strengths is kind of the quick hit throws, the slants in the middle of the field, getting the ball out of Nichols' hands quick, and maybe more importantly, I think it might help the Bombers utilize their screen game more. And that's been an issue a number of years with this team. Not so much under Paul LaPolice, but the previous regime where the running back was basically an afterthought in the passing game. But I like Andrew Harris more as a pass catcher than as a runner. And a quarterback's best friend in scenarios where there is a lot of pressure is some of those quick dump-offs to Harris. So I would not be surprised at all to see Andrew Harris get close to 10 receptions in this game. And I think if he does that's a big help for the Bombers. And I think he can make a big impact in the screen game.
Well, here's Bombers head coach Mike O'Shea on beating the Argonauts pass rush.
Make sure that our receivers are in the right place at the right time. Make sure the protection is there when they do bring pressure, win your one-on-one battles, when they're only bringing four, and make sure that we get rid of the ball on time, which is married to people being in the right place at the right time.
I know we're talking a lot here about the Argo defense and the challenge that they bring to the table, but there might be more challenge tonight specifically for the Bomber defense and a Toronto offense that is second in net yards and averages 399.7. They average 400 yards in their three games in the air. That is something approaching insanity. The 400 yards they average in the air against a defense that is second worst in the league, average giving up 354. So there's trouble there, right? When you got the second worst pass defense per average against a team averaging almost 400 yards, like that's crazy. So that's of concern. I'm more concerned about Ricky Ray, S.J. Green, and what that offense does to the Bomber defense than I am with the bounce back from Matt Nichols and the Bomber offense.
S.J. Green comes in to this game second in receiving yards, only by two. He has 367 yards over three games. Greg Ellingson of the Ottawa Redblacks leads the overall receiving yard category at 369. So S.J. Green comes in with 367 yards receiving in three games. And here's head coach Mike O'Shea on facing S.J. Green.
He's obviously come back from his previous setback very well. He's done a lot in this league, and he's coming back to form, which is obviously good for him and bad for opponents. But, he is a pleasure to watch, that's for sure. But we've got to do our part to make sure we stop him. And some of that is about how we cover, and some of it's about how we pressure.
Like their average pass, their average gain per pass is 9.4 yards. It's almost 2 yards more than the Bombers. And their average gain on first down is 7.6 yards. And the Bombers typically give up quite a bit on first down. Like those sorts of things, the strengths of the Toronto offense and how they compare to the sort of the weaknesses of the Bomber defense are a little bit ominous here. And you just kind of wonder for a team. I know last week most people were pointing towards the Bomber offense saying, hey, if they played a little bit better, the Bomber D played well enough. Well, the Bomber D still gave up plus 400 yards and plus 300 yards in the air, right? So it was a decent or an acceptable game, I guess, maybe more so by the D, disappointed by the offense, but they still got shredded up a little bit. And you just kind of wonder, with Ricky Ray coming in and sort of a very much so a re-energized Ricky Ray. How many people, I had kind of had him half written off in my mind, right? And Mark Trestman comes in, puts an offense that's, with the help of their OC, that's just very complimentary to what Ricky Ray is capable of right now. And like they're averaging 330-plus yards plays a game. They average the very most in the CFL, so very explosive. They got S.J. Green, who's going to be lined up often against Rock Carmichael, and that is going to be a study tonight. There could be a bunch of points scored tonight. Like we're talking about the offense here, but the defense has got their hands full in a huge way.
Is that the key matchup you're watching tonight?
Oh, well,
Carmichael and Green?
It's the scariest.
If it's Green Carmichael, get your rosary beads out. Like it's that can't happen. It can't. Like, I don't know. I mean, you guys watched the first two games, I know.
The thing is, though, brother, that the Argos can make it happen. You can't really move around. I don't know that you can move around.
Which is fair, right?
Right, yeah.
But, I mean, if that's the case, I mean, regardless, I would have doubled Green. But if Carmichael's on him, it becomes mandatory. You cannot have that one-on-one matchup. Or Ricky Ray will kill the Bombers. He'll kill them all night long. And if that's the case, whether it's Loeffler up over the top, with SJ Green, and maybe you try and zone him out that way. But I have two defenders on SJ Green at all times throughout this game, and if it means guys like Armonte Edwards and some of the other pass catchers on the Argos beat you, then hey, that's the case. But I'm not letting their top weapon have a night like he did against Ottawa last week where he broke 200.
It's a little scary and a little tough to try and start outthinking, outsmarting a guy like Ricky Ray.
Kyle Knox is going to take over the linebacking position for Ian Wild, and here is head coach Mike O'Shea on Knox in for Ian Wild.
Be himself, really. I mean, he is a very gifted athlete. He flies around to the football, you know, listen to his teammates, make sure he's in the right spot, and communicate, you know, with Sam Hurl, really, is what he needs to do.
So Knox is in for Wild. We'll talk about this move with Jeff Hamilton for the Winnipeg Free Press when he joins us at the bottom of the hour. But finally, from head coach Mike O'Shea, he was asked what the area of focus was heading into tonight's game.
Finishing, you know, I thought once again, not to go backwards, but in the previous contest, we had our opportunities and we didn't finish those plays. But I think you can say that for the entire team, that we had our opportunities on special teams that we didn't finish defensively. Some guys broke some tackles on us and we didn't finish those plays. So, you know, you try to move forward, but those kind of lessons are, they'll carry through for the entire season, you know, about finishing plays and finishing drives and finishing blocks and finishing your tackles, right? So I think that was really the emphasis for the entire team, not just the offense.
Is that how you guys saw it too? Because that's what I said at the start of the week, the Stampeders game left me wondering, like I didn't see or get what I wanted from the game to evaluate the Bombers team because I just didn't think they were executing well enough or doing what I think they're capable of. And then he said just that finishing too. Is that what you're looking for tonight? Is that how you see that going into tonight's game for the Bombers?
Well, finishing, is that an offensive reference? Putting the ball in the end zone? Like Calgary, that I don't know who was here offensively in the first half. I don't know if the Calgary offense was abducted by aliens and they returned Bo Levi Mitchell to the locker room at halftime. Like that wasn't Bo Levi Mitchell, right? And so what they did in the second half to sort of like Calgary Stampeders showed up last week with seven changes to the roster, their D line decimated with injury and affected by the ratio, brought. Was that their B game? Might have been their C game. And they came in and they took it. The Bombers had their B or C game as well and couldn't quite pull it out sort of thing, right? Especially in the second half here. So the Bombers absolutely, if the Bombers play like they did last week, they'll lose this game. Period, end of story. Ricky Ray's going to put up a pile of points. You have to assume that they're not going to stall at the red zone the way they have. Only put in, they've been there 12 times in three games, and they've only capitalized three times. I don't know if that happens tonight or not, but when you got a team coming into town averaging 400 yards passing, that is ridiculous, and you've got one of the most questionable defenses in the CFL and the Bombers. Like, there's a whole lot to prove on both sides of the ball tonight.
We'll get your thoughts on tonight's game on the Boss Pizza Fan Line starting at 9 o'clock, and of course more on the Bombers Argos with Jeff Hamilton at the bottom of the hour. We'll take a break, come back, much more on The Big Show coming up on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290's Summer Street Team is at Winnipeg's best events all summer. We'll be at concerts, sporting events, charity fundraisers, and more. We'll be bringing our Spin to Win prize wheel to give you a chance to win great stuff like Jets gear, Tim Hortons and McMunn and Yates gift cards, a Burton snowboard with bindings from Alter Ego Sports, and weekend road trip getaways from Explore Egan, Minnesota, including two-night stay at the Egan Holiday Inn Express, a $100 gift card for Casper's Cherokee of Egan, and family passes for four to Nickelodeon Universe, Moose Mountain, and Sea Life at Mall of America, and much more. You can find us next at MTS Super Spike, July 21st and 22nd, at the Maple Grove Rugby Park. For more information on these great events and TSN 1290's Summer Street Team, visit tsn1290.ca. The Big Show with Jim, Troy, and Brandon. We're going to talk a little bit about Andrew Kopp's contract, gentlemen. We'll get back into that. But this is interesting from Darren Rovell, I follow on Twitter. He put out So the Green Bay Packers, whatever they are, community owned or publicly owned or whatever, have to, of course, unveil their finances every year. And the only reason you can find out what other NFL teams are sharing, you know, on national revenue is through the Packers, because they have to report this publicly. Last year, the 32 NFL teams equally split $7.8 billion in national revenue. The national revenue of the National Football League last year was $7.8 billion, mostly from television money, and the 32 teams split $7.8 billion in shared revenue. What is that per team?
According to my math, which was helped out by the Manitoba education system, should be somewhere between 230 and 250 million per team.
So last year, mostly from television revenue, each team
gets over 200 mil.
Gets minimum $230 million just from television revenue, mostly. That's the shared revenue. And we always talk about this, like the NFL is an entity, it's an industry, it's nonstop, it can do what it wants. It's like, that is astronomical when you look at a team getting 230 to 250 million just from shared revenue.
It's pretty cool, man. It's cash cow, no question.
And then you look at, what's the salary cap in the NFL? It's,
you're supposed to know the answer to that.
115-ish, or it's, yeah, it's over 100 million. And yeah, if my math is actually correct, it's 245 million.
So
initially, the split.
If it's 7.86, yeah.
235 million, your salary cap is just over a million, and that doesn't include your ticket sales, your merchandise, your...
Yeah, or any
NFL
of your expenses.
NFL makes a lot of money. Newsflash.
Or any of your expenses, yeah.
Yeah, and expenses. And stuff.
Sorry, NFL salary cap for this year, $167 million.
It's a whole lot more than the CFL, I tell you that, suckers.
I just found that interesting. Andrew Kopp did not get $230 million or anything near that. He got a two-year deal for $2 million, $900,000 the first year, $1.1 million the second year, AAV of $1 million for forward Andrew Kopp of the Winnipeg Jets. Good deal? Bad deal?
Certainly not. No one's going to think that's a bad deal, right? No, there's an upside here to Andrew Kopp. Emerged nicely last year, capitalized on the opportunities he had when he was in the top six, and super interested to see what he's able to continue to grow into this year. Good skater, got all kinds of grit and sandpaper, and has got a real sweet, sneaky, wicked, quick release, and some good mustard on the shot as well. So a bit of a fan favorite maybe here, or sort of morphing into that, and applause. Happy he's here.
Yeah, I think it's a deal. You look at it and go, yeah, fair. You know, nothing more, nothing less. I think he's just a nice kind of complimentary piece that you can maybe slot in and out of the fourth, third line. I mean, it kind of depends what the Jets opt when it comes to how they optimize their lineup. Because if you want to go, you know, a top nine and really load up the skill there and maybe even things out a little bit, Andrew Kopp can certainly be, you know, someone who can fit in your top nine as a winger. But everything the Jets do offensively feels like it's kind of predicated with how they handle Adam Lowry this year. Because if you want to use Adam Lowry as your Brian Boyle type of guy and put him on your fourth line, well, then all of a sudden things in your top nine get a little bit interesting with how you dole that out.
10 out of 10 shocked I will be if Lowry's on the fourth line center this year.
Right now, who's your Jets third line center? Adam Lowry? And if he is, who's your fourth line?
Oh, I just said 10 out of 10 shock if Lowry is placed at the fourth line. I would like to see, I'm right there with you, Wicks, I'd like to see it. But from all indication on what it seems they think of him and the situations they're putting him in, I think they envision him as their third line center.
So
period,
who's your fourth line center right now?
I would like to see Nick Petan being given a real honest chance. If Nick Petan, before last year, a lot of people didn't think that he was going to be able to skate well enough or have the game to play in the NHL. I think last year there was enough progress made that he was at times quite impressive. And I just wonder, now another offseason behind him, that much older, stronger, although everything that comes into play here, is he able to make another little bit of a step? And when you have that sort of skill set involved, I'd like to see Nick Petan being given that chance to, and to, you know, because the fourth line, like, it's really the third line is sort of playing the role of a fourth line, even though Lowry's going to be getting that sort of a nice time. And I think Nick Petan, with nice compliments on his wings, like, you're talking about having a productive fourth line that can give you, for sure, 7-8 minutes type of thing.
He's got to be better defensively.
I don't like Nick Petan as a center.
Yeah,
I don't. I think he could be a really good winger. That's not to say he can't be an effective forward for the Jets, but I don't know. I've never really liked his game at center. But having said that, I don't see a reason why he can't be the Jets' version of kind of like a Connor Sheary, where maybe you play him up a bit higher up and insulate him with some better line mates. And for me, if Petan's on the Jets, he's got to play with real high-end skill. He sees the game in a similar fashion as those guys do. If you have him playing with, there's not necessarily kind of grinders and muckers on the Jets team, but I'd like to see him get a chance on the wing of a real skilled line.
We got to go, but with Andrew Kopp's contract, there's $8.9 million left in cap space for this upcoming season for the Jets. If we're all in agreement, Connor Hellebuck's going to get $1.5 million to $2 million. That makes roughly $6.9 million, and there's $4 million around bonuses with Ehlers and Laine. Just off that, there's $2.9 million left in cap space for the Jets, which is not a lot. But that's where it sort of sits. Well, it'd be interesting to see what Connor Hellebuck gets.
And you want to keep something on the side for the push before the...
Yeah, like, right? And two isn't a lot to keep. Sure. I mean, obviously, if you do make a push, something's got to go out. Or does it?
Oh, the deadline.
Yeah.
Things can work out because you're not paying the whole year.
Exactly. That's where the cap space sits with the Andrew Kopp contract. Jeff Hamilton's next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is a proud supporter of the 5th Annual Stars for Special Golf Tournament, Tuesday, August 23rd at Glendale Golf and Country Club. It's a Texas Scramble-style tournament with proceeds going to Special Olympics Manitoba. Lots of fun throughout. Each team is assigned a celebrity golfer to play with for 9 holes. It includes dinners, draws, silent auction, and more. For more details, visit specialolympics.mb.ca. Great event, and at our home course here on The Big Show, Glendale Golf and Country Club. Should be a great time. Once again, specialolympics.mb.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki. We're a half hour away from opening the Boss Pizza fan line. Getting your thoughts on a number of topics include who you have in tonight's Bombers-Argos tilt at Investors Group Field. 7:30 is kickoff. 5:30 is a Manuk Dencher Blue Bomber game day with Darren Bombing, Troy Westwood, and Mr. Chris Walby. And a frequent guest of that program is also a good friend of ours from the Winnipeg Free Press, Jeff Hamilton. How are you, sir?
Not bad, Jimbo. What's going on?
Not too much. Just excited for this game. And before we get into it and the details and the injuries and the matchups and everything, I couldn't really – I was left not frustrated but still left wanting from what I could find out from this Bombers team against that Stamps game. How did you feel after the Stamps game from the Bombers' perspective?
I think I shared maybe a bit more critical even view as similar to Matt Nichols. I thought it was the offense that cost them the game. I mean, you can't put up a goose egg and 10 points in total against any team and expect to walk away with a W. So clearly that one falls on the offense. And the defense, for all the slack that they've gotten from last season with how many yards and you know, even through the first two games here, I mean, they did everything they possibly could from, you know, that enormous goal stand that eventually led to a Calgary touchdown on the sixth attempt to until it was just too little too late. They were just too tired by the end of it. So I think this one, for if anything, I think it fell on the offense, and I'm certainly looking, they'll be looking for a little bit of redemption here tonight against Toronto.
Your feel for the possibility of a big-time bounce-back type game here for Matt Nichols?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I just, my feeling doesn't, I'm not saying I don't think it's going to happen. I just, you know, with such a good Toronto Argonauts defense, I think, you know, if he does have a major bounce back game, I think it's, you know, it's almost an extra bounce back game, just given the talent of that front seven and what they've been able to do through three games this year. I mean, the only defense that has limited off opposing offenses to less than 20 points. I mean, they have 14 sacks in three games. That's double the next team in Calgary. And I just think it's it'll be a tall task. But that being said, Matt Nichols has kind of been known for his ability to bounce back. You know that, you know, he said yesterday he has forgiven himself, but there's part of you that, you know, thinks that he hasn't, just for those two interceptions. It's kind of his, thing to protect the ball and make smart decisions. And last game against Calgary, we just didn't see that. So I'm expecting one. Whether or not we'll see it, I guess we'll have to wait and see.
And what do you expect from Ricky Ray tonight?
I don't know. Much of the same. I mean, as long as he can stay healthy, I think this guy's going to be, you know, definitely in the conversations for MVP this year. I mean, it's just been lights out. It, you know, him and that connection with SJ Green, it's just, you know, I don't think it's, you know, it's one of the best 1-2 tandems in the CFL right now. And he just seems like no matter what's happening, you know, he gets the ball downfield. He doesn't really run the ball. I mean, Toronto, if you look at their stats, it's something like ridiculous, like 80-20 to runs. And I think that's even favoring running a little bit more than even what they've done. But this is a guy who, despite being 37 years old and coming off an injury-riddled season last year, is, you know, is kind of rejuvenated and has that chemistry in that offense under Mark Trestman, who clearly identified him as the number one when he came in as head coach this year. So it's just been a crazy year for Ricky Ray, but it's still early. But, you know, if anything, I think it's right for the picking against the Bombers defense that's a little banged up.
Baptism by fire seems to continue tonight, where S.J. Green likely to be often on Rock Carmichael. Your thought on the matchup and whether or not the Bombers do something to help Mr. Carmichael?
Yeah, you have to think just, I mean, you can scratch up the first game as, you know, getting used to the CFL. I think after the Calgary game, it's just, I think it became pretty much blatantly clear that you got to help him out. I mean, if they're not helping him out, and he is lined up against S.J. Green, I just don't think it's a contest. He's the guy who goes up and gets every single ball. Ricky Ray talked about it yesterday, about just the confidence he has. And, you know, even in plays that don't, you know, might not look like they're developing to plan, just putting it in his, you know, his realm, which seems to be wider than anybody else's just through 3 weeks. I just don't like that matchup. I don't think many Bomber fans will like that matchup. And you have to think that the plan is to get to Ricky Ray as quickly as possible, so he doesn't have the ability to read three or four different routes and is able to find particularly S.J. Green or any one of his receivers at this point.
Jeff, we've talked extensively throughout the week and this morning on this pass rush and how to beat it and what the Argos defense is bringing. A lot, and rightfully so, has been said about this Argos offense and the resurgence of Ricky Ray, not that he ever went anywhere, but this defense for the Argos, what do you expect from them and how do you beat it?
I expect what I've seen through the first 3 weeks, just an aggressive attack in the front four, the linebackers group with Bear Woods, Marcus Ball. I mean, they are a violent, hard-hitting, you know, quick defense, and I'm expecting much of the same tonight against you know, the Bombers O-line that for all the praise that they earned last year, I mean, it hasn't really translated into this season. So to stop it, I think it's really giving Matt Nichols enough time, you know, like Ricky Ray, and he's getting from his O-line this year, enough time to, you know, read the plays. And it's on the receivers as well. It's not just Matt Nichols hanging in there, you know, like not making the right decisions. It's making sure that the receivers have the right routes, that they're getting open and that he can find them. So, it's going to be a collective effort for everybody, all, you know, receivers, O-line, Matt Nichols, all making smart decisions and, you know, cliche, but it's just straight up doing your job. And that's certainly, you know, it's going to be important against this defense and really the only way, in my opinion, that you're going to stop that vicious attack.
If things continue on like what we've seen early this season, where Toronto's playing at this level and, you know, bringing a real solid defense and their offense clicking at this rate, I guess ultimately we shouldn't be all that surprised, even though Pop and Trestman were late hires. You look at who's leading this whole outfit and you kind of go, I guess this makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I asked the question to Mark Trestman yesterday if he felt he was surprised, and he pretty much interrupted me halfway through the question, knowing, obviously having heard that one before, I guess. And just, you know, it's not only did they have talent there, I think that was, you know, you talk about Ricky Ray being rejuvenated. I think a lot of the veterans that stuck around for this year also felt rejuvenated just with a, you know, a whole change in management and coaching. And then you look at some of the additions. I mean, we talked about SJ Green, but you look at a guy like Bear Woods, who, you know, didn't really garner a lot of interest, I don't think, around the league, was trying to create a bit of a bidding war among teams and just kind of fell into Toronto's lap. And they were the only ones that really thought they could use him at that point. I mean, teams have already kind of went with their guys. It was early in training camp, yes, but had already kind of went through the defensive schemes, including Winnipeg, who had no interest in signing him. So, you know, he's just been able to come into that team and add that dynamic, that leadership, and, you know, continue building, I guess, what they were trying to do at the beginning. I just think the results have just become, you know, been quicker maybe than they even expected, whether or not they admit it. But you're right, Troy. I mean, I think they had the pieces there. It was just whether or not they would be able to come together this quickly. And through 3 weeks, I think we've seen that a lot faster than maybe that was first expected.
Jeff Hamilton from the Winnipeg Free Press joining us on the Big Show this morning, 42 minutes past the hour on TSN 1290. Talking Bombers and Argos, Jeff, we talk a lot about Matt Nichols, the O-line, of course, so we even got into the running game and Andrew Harris, but which receivers for the Bombers do you think needs to step up, or is that just have to come through Matt Nichols? Is there a receiver out there or a couple of them that you think could be better for the Bombers?
Yeah, it's hard to, you know, necessarily pinpoint one guy, but I think I mentioned this a couple of days ago that I just feel like someone needs to be a game breaker. Someone needs, you know, whether or not, you know, whether Weston Dressler has, you know, is averaging 100 yards receiving through 2 weeks. I mean, granted, 126 of that was in, you know, not only just in the game against the Riders, but in a span of about 90 seconds. But it was, you know, you need to have a guy that just steps up, whether it's Matt Nichols' fault or whomever is. You just need a guy that's going to get open and make plays. So, you know, does it need to be two or three guys? No, but perhaps it needs to be one or two. So, you know, I put everyone on that receivers group in that list, whether it's Clarence Denmark, who, you know, has been relatively quiet for the first two games, Weston Dressler, Darvin Adams needs to be their superstar. I mean, even guys like LaDainian Washington. I mean, yeah, great, you got a touchdown against the Riders. Now you got to ride that momentum. I think they need a guy that's getting open, and of course that falls on Matt Nichols to connect with them. Because last game, I mean, I think he aired out six balls that were beyond 20 yards, and none of them were caught, and five of them weren't in the same area code. So it's, you know, whether that's a miscommunication from Nichols' part or the receivers, I mean, that's something I think is identified in the room and not really shared to people outside, but at the end of the day, you need someone to step up and be that big time player. And I think right now we just haven't seen that this year from anyone on the Bombers, to be honest.
The Bombers 11-4 since last July, and going back to last year, they are 4-6. Their last 10 at home. At some point in time, this curse, whatever's going on here at IGF, turns around, right?
You'd think so. I mean, 4-6 almost sounds like a pretty good record for the Bombers, given that they're 11-26 and 37 games there. So, I mean, they only have one winning record against an opposing team at IGF, and that's the Saskatchewan Roughriders, who have won a combined 8 games in the past 2 years, not counting this season, of course. But, you know, I mean, it's one of those things that you just don't quite understand. I mean, Mike O'Shea said you don't game plan history, and I'm not necessarily connecting those two things per se, but, you know, yeah, you can kind of ignore the whole Calgary Stampeders have kicked their butts in 17 out of 18 games. You know, all these horrible stats that used to be in Edmonton last year before the Bombers finally got a win out there. But the reality is, I mean, you got to protect your house. I mean, this is home field advantage. You're in front of your own fans. You know, you have all the amenities that other teams don't. You know, like you sleep in your own bed the night before games. You're using your own dressing room, which is significantly better than the visitors. There's all these little advantages that you just think would translate into, big advantages when it comes to getting on the field, and we just haven't seen that. It's a weird one to explain, and you know, you got to think it's a point of pride for this team, but something that, you know, you just have to think over time is just going to shore up itself. I mean, guys, I mean, there's 9 home games a year, and if you're 11-26, like, it's going to take you a bit before you even get to 500 at your stadium. But, you know, no time like the present to start marching up and getting that number near 500.
What do you think happens tonight, Hammer?
It's a tough one. I really do think, I mean...
That's the hammer question of the week every week.
Yeah.
What do you think happens tonight?
With Ian Wild out, I just, you know, to be a weak side, linebacker, you need to be athletic. You need to be, you know, you need to be able to drop in and play coverage, and you need to identify plays. Ian Wild and Sam Hurrell had a chemistry where they didn't need to talk a lot of times, and they just kind of knew where they were going. I think with Kyle Knox, who, you know, obviously we talked for weeks about how he was the front runner for that middle linebacker spot, he ultimately lost out that job to Hurrell because he wasn't reading defenses as well as Hurrell. So Hurrell's now going to have to become, not say hold his hand, but he's going to have to coach him up and make sure he's in the right position. I think that's a very, very vulnerable spot for the Bombers when you already have a field side with Rock Carmichael and Brandon Alexander, who are getting better, I suppose, with each week, but are still new to this system, new to this league, and have seen through the first two games to be, you know, have some holes there. I just think it's going to be a tall task for the Bombers. And, you know, they are at home, though, and we've seen crazier things happen. You know, it seems like adversity gets this team going, so I think they have plenty of that to build off of. And, you know, at this point, you can't guarantee a Bombers win or even suggest it. It's going to be a close game regardless.
Great stuff, Jeff. We appreciate it. Why are you laughing, Troy?
Just, I don't know, man. And I'm now looking at the depth chart going, Alexander, Carmichael, Knox. That's a very interesting point, yeah.
Sorry, I just looked up and I saw Troy laughing. And I'm like, yeah, it's going to be a good one for sure. Jeff, we appreciate your time, as always. Thanks for doing this.
Glad I can keep you entertained, guys.
Take care, Hammer. Take care, man.
The Winnipeg Free Press is Jeff Hamilton, of course, on The Big Show. And hey, we have a pair of tickets for you to go to tonight's game between the Bombers and the Argos. 780-1290, 780-1290, the 12th caller through. The key is you have to pick these up today before 5 when our office is closed at 1445 Pembina Highway. You could pick them up on your way to the game as long as it's before 5.
12th caller through could be the 13th man.
There you go.
That might be the difference tonight, peeps.
We had an enormous time trying to figure out how that broke down for money for NFL teams, so... 12th caller
calculator
gets 13th man.
I couldn't put enough zeros on there.
Deadspin has a great article on that amount of money in the NFL, by the way. You can imagine the headline. Well, you can't. Deadspin.com if you want to check it out. 780-1290. 12th caller through could be the 13th man or woman at the Bombers Argos tonight here on The Big Show. TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
TSN1290 is proud to be a media sponsor of the upcoming 2017 Canada Summer Games, July 28th to August 13th in our city. 16 sports, 250 events, and it will mark the 50th anniversary of the Canada Summer Games and welcome over 20,000 visitors. Tomorrow and every Friday, you can help paint the town red, yellow, and orange until July 21st. Wear your official 2017 Canada Summer Games clothing. Take a picture of yourself and share the photo using the handle at 2017 Canada Games and hashtag gear up for a chance to win a Via Rail promotional travel credit. Visit thecanadagames.ca/2017 for more information about Games Gear Fridays. Opening and closing ceremonies tickets are available at ticketmaster.ca. And for 11 days, over 150 artists and fireworks every night will be the stars of the Manitoba Liquor and Lottery's Canada Games Festival, which will take place from July 29th to August 12th at the Forks. Visit canadagames.ca/2017. for the full festival lineup as well. The Big Show, Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki on a Minuke Denture Blue Bomber game day. Boss Pizza Fan Line is going to be open in our next segment, 780-1290. Who do you like in tonight's game between the Bombers and the Argos? Mr. Westwood, what do you expect tonight?
Well, I expect a lot of nervous fans of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers settling into IGF for what should be a very entertaining and wildly competitive game. The Bombers got their hands full. There was all kinds of concern with Calgary coming in last week, and the Bombers couldn't take advantage of a situation where Calgary brought something less than what people were expecting for the most part. And now you're coming in here with You know, a very surprising defense in the Toronto Argonauts. I think people probably would have suspected the, you know, with Trestman coming in and Pop coming in, that, yeah, maybe you can resurrect Ricky Ray and get him operating at a level. I don't know that anyone would have thought Ricky Ray would be averaging essentially 400 yards passing per game at this point in time. And nor would have anyone thought the Argos would lead the league by more than double the number two team in sacks. And the level of disruption we're about to witness with Butler and Lemon coming off the edges is a little bit frightening. And the only team, like Jeff Hamilton was saying, in the league to hold its opponents to less than 20 points a game. Compare that to the Bombers' defense allowing 31.5. I'm trying to be optimistic. I'm looking for a glint. Show me a ray of sunshine somewhere outside of having all kinds of faith that Matt Nichols and Paul LaPolice are going to, Matt Nichols specifically, with the scheme and the play calling here of Paul LaPolice, I think the offense answers the bell tonight, and we see a much sharper, way sharper offense here. But I'm really worried about what Ricky Ray is going to be able to accomplish out there. You're talking about an Argo offense that says to running, they don't care. 91% of the yards come from passing, and they can run. And they got Brandon Whitaker's. That's a scary thing. If they ever do dish it off, it's a dude that has been disastrous for Bomber teams in the past. So what am I expecting? I don't know, but I'm worried.
I almost got run over there when I tried to interject a question. Mr. Rewicki.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the rosy picture that Troy painted there leads me to believe the Bombers are... The thing that kind of scares me the most is I'm going to the game tonight. I'm 0-4 at IGF.
Maybe you're a bit of the curse. Well,
you might get banned.
Yeah, which is fair.
We have a special seat reserved for you, sir.
Yeah, outside. I think this is going to be a tight one down to the wire. I really do, just because I think both teams offensively match up well with kind of the weaknesses of what the other club does. I think the Bombers can exploit the Argonauts' defense and the Argos' pass rush with the screen game and with Andrew Harris. But I also think the Argos are going to exploit the Bombers' secondary issues. So I don't know who's going to pull it out, but it doesn't surprise me at all to see this one come down to the final 3 minutes, and whoever has the ball last wins the game.
Can I please put a little bit of fire extinguisher on or a little bit of water on the excitement that you're creating? Just if you think the Bombers can solve that pass rush, then you got the secondary, and they've held the three quarterbacks. This is the QUAR is the new rating system in the CFL they're using for quarterbacks. And they've held quarterbacks. Kolaros, 23.4, his rating for the game. Jonathan Jennings, 65.6, when his average so far this year is 73.1. Trevor Harris to 59.0, when his league average right now is 78.2. So the secondary and the passing defense of the Argos has also caused quarterbacks to play under what they have under their average. So it seems like the defense here, the Argos, is right across the board. So even if you do take care of that push that they got, it seems like their back end is pretty solid as well.
Yeah, but all three of those quarterbacks suck.
There we go.
I heard a coach used to be in the division of the Indianapolis Colts, used to tell his defense every time they played the Colts, well, Manning sucks. So. Manning sucks. What do you think? Who do you have in tonight's Argos Bombers tilt? Andrew Kopp got a contract 2 years, averaging $1 million per. McGregor Mayweather, are you going to watch it? And Jacob Slavin of the Carolina Hurricanes, 7 years with an AAV of $5.3 million. What does that mean for Jacob Trouba? And, of course, your thoughts on the Bombers Argos. Who do you have in tonight's game at IGF? 780-1290 next on The Big Show.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
Boston Pizza fan line wide open, 780-1290 on The Big Show with Jim, Troy, and Brandon. Who do you have in tonight's Bombers Argos tilt? Who wins it? How and why? Andrew Kopp has a new 2-year contract with an AAV of $1 million per. Do you like it? And do you like Andrew Kopp? Where does he fit in? McGregor Mayweather. Discussion continues. A lot of people wish it would not. Are you going to watch the fight?
Did you watch press conference number two yesterday? 780-1290, or you can text us at 1290-90 with standard message rates applying. Also, Sidney Crosby's thoughts on concussions. We ran that earlier in the show. And Jacob Slavin of the Carolina Hurricanes, 23 years old, left shot defenseman, 7 years, averaging $5.3 million per after next year. So they just locked him up for the next 8 years. Entry level continues this upcoming season, and then it's $5.3 million. Where does that slide in with you and the Winnipeg Jets, Jacob Trouba? Would you sign him to that deal? Would you like to get him at that price? 780-1290 here on The Big Show. And TSN 1290 is proud to present MTS Super Spike July 21st and 22nd at Maple Grove Rugby Park. Team registration deadline is this Friday at midnight at superspike.ca. Choose any skill level, recreational, intermediate, or competitive. Headliners on the concert stage this year include the Sam Roberts Band, the Litex, the Treble, and more. Weekend passes for all the shows are on sale now at superspike.ca, or keep listening right here to TSN 1290 this week for a chance to win tickets. We'll do that later on of the program. All proceeds from this year's event go to Volleyball Manitoba, Kids Sport Manitoba, and the True North Foundation. Jim, Troy, and Brandon on the Boston Pizza Fan Line.
You know, it's interesting about the Slavin contract is last year Trouba bouncing up his points per game up to 0.55, right, where previous to that 0.29, 0.23, 0.19, and then you have the breakthrough of the 0.55 that you can attach to and lean on, of course, if you're in his corner negotiating. And with Slavin here, they get to this contract before he can bounce up to that, right? He goes 0.32, 0.41. Uh-oh, we better jump on this quick before, right? It's an interesting, the back and forth and when to offer up these dishes and such, and how safe the player and the agent want to play it, or whatever comes into play here. But very little doubt within a year or two, if not already, you look at this contract, go, boy, oh boy, did Slavin and his agent ever leave a bunch on the table there.
So what do you do with Trouba then? And if you're Jacob Trouba,
he's already said, I'm playing out this year. Like, right? Like, what are you doing with him? You got to wait and endure whatever he accomplishes this year.
Well, he said, I have a contract and I don't see anything changing.
I am positive he referenced playing out the end of this year. He said he's got a contract, played out, and then discuss things after he's done.
Yeah, he was, to just put it in proper context, he was asked, would he be willing to sign long-term or doing that? And he said, well, I have a contract. I don't see things changing. I'm going to play this year at that. When asked if the Jets came at you with a massive deal, would you?
Didn't sound like he was interested. He answered it politely. Didn't sound like he was interested in it whatsoever.
Yeah. I mean, like, if I'm the Jets, I offer him a long-term contract every chance I get.
Maybe
and
every morning.
Just keep pushing
with a fruit basket.
Yeah, whatever. Derek Jeter fruit basket, right? Like, whatever it takes. I'm just saying, whatever it takes, I try to make sure Trouba's happy and wants to sign long term. But if he doesn't, I mean, you don't really have a whole lot of options if you're the Jets, do you? Right?
Like, have Buff or Morrissey carry his luggage on the road. He can do all kinds of things to help it out.
Yeah, and I still, if. Like, I look at this deal Slavin's got, and I look at Jacob Trouba, and do you want to go 3 more years of bridge deal, making $3 million, I think? Like, what's his next bridge deal if he doesn't sign long-term? He made $6 million over 2 years. What is it, $8 million over 2 years?
Yeah.
Is it another six?
I don't know how bridge deals work necessarily salary-wise, but I mean, I don't know. You're in a tough spot if you're the Jets. Like, you wonder
if he wants out, that's what it's going to be. It's going to be another bridge deal.
You wonder how long the window is anyways for most teams, right? And maybe 2 years is kind of the time you attack that if you're Winnipeg. But I guess it depends, because maybe by the end of this season, there's another defenseman on another team that's unhappy with his situation. And maybe a swap could be in order where it works out for both sides. But
you could pray for that, yeah.
Right. It's tough to say right now. I don't know. We saw another player that held out get moved this offseason in Jonathan Drouin. And that basically puts that up to 1,000 batting percentage of a guy that holds out with his team, not lasting extremely long. So as much as I love watching Jacob Trouba and think he's going to be an upper echelon number one defenseman in the NHL, I don't know. Track record says that he's on the way out. but that doesn't mean he can't be a big contributor for the Jets this year.
Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Who's first?
Mike.
Mike, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning.
I have a question. Would you sign Morrissey or Trouba to 8 years, $60 million?
I would not sign Morrissey to that, no. It's way too early for that.
Okay, what would you bridge him at then?
Well, he's got another year after this. No, he's got this year.
Yeah.
Because he had a year with the Moose. You know what? It depends on the season he has, but I would bridge him at maybe what I bridged Jacob Trouba at. See, the problem with, it's not that you wouldn't do this. It's all got to fit somehow. And the problem with doing that for both those guys is you don't have to right now. I would lock up Jacob Trouba the minute I could. Josh Morrissey, I bridge just to buy me another 2 to 3 years until something like Wheeler comes off the books or something else goes forward or Enstrom and all that comes off the books. Like, so to me, it's not that I wouldn't want to sign Josh Morrissey for 8 years. It's that I need to make it fit this year, next, and then go forward in the third year. So 3 years from now, if he's still top pairing and continues to progress, by all means. But this year or next year, I don't do it. You guys?
Okay, but aren't you, in a way, just contradicting yourself? Oh, it's a great that Carolina signed Slavin for this, and he's still a RFA, and now you won't say the same thing with Morrissey.
No, because it fits in Carolina. Like, next year, if you give Jacob Trouba and Josh Morrissey an 8-year contract, I presume you're going to do the Patrick Laine before his year is done. You're going to lock him up like McGregor or Austin Matthews for 8 years. You got Dustin Byfuglien on the books at 7-6. Like, to me, Dustin Byfuglien comes off the books in 2021. And I think in 2 to 3 years, when you're going to offer Morrissey that 8-year deal, you do it with Dustin Byfuglien off the books. And there's your next big time deal.
Well, you're paying a lot more for that big time deal then, right? That's the attractive part for Carolina coming at it early with Slavin, is that you can offer less money like that. If you wait until he acquires more of a resume, then you're in a whole bunch of trouble with a bunch more money.
Yeah. I don't know if you have any other options though. Like, I agree with Jim here. You might have to bridge Morrissey. You might have to bridge Ehlers as well. Like, you might have to go both ways there, depending on who stays and who goes. Because, I mean, we talked about Steve Yzerman a bunch being kind of a cap ninja and how he's able to make a lot of those young players work under their salary cap there. Nikita Kucherov got a bridge deal last year, and people were praising him. Can you believe they got Kucherov for, what is it, 4.7 per? Well, Kucherov was an MVP candidate this year, and he's gonna cost them $7 or $8 million when he comes time to renegotiate his next deal when he's at the end of the RFA. But that's just the boat you're in right now in the NHL. Like, you have to, you can't just give everybody 7-8 year deals.
No.
Right? Like, as much as you would like to in theory, like, yeah, sure, Morrissey 7 years and Trouba and Ehlers and all those guys, you want to lock them up for as long as you can, but you know, when it comes to windows, you got to make these things work. And while a guy like Laine, you basically need to lock that down as quick as possible, with Ehlers and Morrissey, you can kind of get away with that for a couple of years at least and buy yourself some time before you have to give up those 7-year deals.
Like, are you locking up Josh Morrissey, Mike, after 1 year?
Well, I'm not so much sure I want to lock him up, but I'm thinking that if you don't have Byfuglien on your team, then you don't have to pay the... If he's your number one left D, you got to pay him what your top D is playing. That's why Carolina could make that deal so quick, because their top D guy is only making $4.6 million.
4.8.
Or 4.8.
The other reason they can do it, though, is they only have now, with Slavin, they only have two defensemen under contract past this next season.
Oh, well, that's one reason. The other reason is they're not paying anybody more than $4.8 million. Mm-hmm. We're paying Byfuglien 7.6, and he's our number two right D. So if you're the number one right D or number one lefty, I want more than your number two right D guy makes.
Yeah, I don't look at it that way. I honestly don't. I don't look at where you're playing dictates the money. I look at it, what are your six defensemen making and does it fit? And I do that the same with your goaltending. Like, I go back to the Corey Schneider, Roberto Luongo days where Schneider's making $900K and starting and Luongo's making six on the bench. I look at that as your goaltending's costing you $7 million. Like, it just has to fit, and how you make it fit is with bridge deals. So you go to Josh Morrissey and you say, you know, we can't offer you long-term right now. We would like to, but in the meantime, we'd offer you, I don't know, 2 a year. He'll go, no way, I'm your top pairing. I want 5. And you end up giving him what Trouba got. Until it fits better with Bufflin off the books or somebody else.
It's wonderful. It's complex. It ain't no checkers, that's for sure.
I'll tell you what, though. I mean, if you could get Morrissey on a 3-year bridge deal, he would still be an RFA coming off of that, I believe. And that's when Bufflin's contract runs out as well. So you can...
Yeah, that's what I would do.
If you can make that happen if you're the Jets, and maybe Morrissey has to kind of help the team out a little bit. You're still, I mean, at that point, Morrissey would be in 3 years, 25 years old. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if you're Josh Morrissey, you're, and if you're the Jets, you're still locking up a 25-year-old defenseman till he's 32, 33, which
if you want
you're
to,
still
yeah.
paying for pretty damn close to prime years at that point.
Like, looking at the deals and the contracts, that's exactly what I do. As soon as I put this together, and again, I always include this, I have the team, or I would, re-sign Brian Little. So looking at how it all fits in the pieces and what comes off the books next year in Enstrom and stuff like that and what doesn't and what goes forward, all I can do is bridge Josh Morrissey, but then understanding that when he's 25, 3 years from now, he's going to get a big payday, but probably Dustin Bufflin's off the books.
And if I'm Josh Morrissey, guys, that's what I want in a lot of ways as well, because I think ultimately long term to when you're 32 years old or 33, if he has a bridge here and gets paid well, right, and he will up until he's 25 years old, and then at that point in time you're able to land a 7 or 8 year deal that takes you into being 32, 33 years old, I think that's how you can maximize your dollars there, right? Depending on your age when you come into the league, a la McDavid, and you come in that young, or a Laine, and then at the end of this, your second contract being an 8-year deal, you come out when you're still 28, and bam, you get another massive deal. But for a bunch of the guys, to manage your situation with this second contract being a bridge deal, and then having your big 8-year or 7-year commitment, and which comes to an end when you're 32, 33 years old, I think that's the best thing for players to do.
Like, to compare it to Carolina, I think Noah Hanifin or Van Riemsdyk is your Josh Morrissey, because you've locked up Slavin, you got Justin Falk, you're going to give Hanifin or Van Riemsdyk an extension, and then one of those other two guys I mentioned, either Hanifin or Van Riemsdyk, the opposite guy, is a bridge guy until you can make it fit long term 2 to 3 years down the road. That's why Slavin fits nicely now.
Well, Slavin and Hanifin are both lefty.
But if you're Hanifin at 20 and Slavin's 23, you probably don't mind a bridge at 20. Because then in 3 years from now, you sit down and go, okay, well, you're paying Slavin 5.3. I want 7. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, again, it all has to fit. But it's a good question, Mike. We appreciate that. And the thoughts on that. Back to Boss Pizza Fan Line. Oh, sorry. So thanks, Mike. If you want to weigh in on the conversation and who you think in the Argos Bombers game tonight, 780-1290 or text us at 1290-90 with standard message rates applying. I'm getting a lot on Twitter about Jaromir Jagr. A lot of fans would like to see the Jets sign Jagr for $1 million.
Well, how so wonderful. Like, that would just be cool as hell, right? Who wouldn't love that? There might be 31 fan bases that would love that. Like, you wonder, is the stick up the money that he wants? Is he just feeling things out? Like, you know dang well he's going to land somewhere, and he's going to have some fantastic for what you get in him impact here. But yeah, sign me up for that as well.
We got to take a break. Yeah. I'll ask you this question when we come back and take more of your calls. We've got some coming in on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290, 780-1290. The question I was going to ask, we'll get to the Boss Pizza Fan Line momentarily, was, with my rough estimations and poor math skills of 2.9 mil left on the cap, would you sign Jagr to a 1 year, 1 mil, leaving you with about just under 2 mil?
Well, I guess the question is, on the right side, so what, you're going to push Armia down to the fourth line?
Well, yeah, that's the other thing is, I mean, the price fits. I don't know if I would leave myself that strapped, but you also, that's the other thing about signing Jágr is, who are you taking out of the lineup? I mean,
where does he go? I guess.
Right now, he's an improvement on Armia, as much as I like Armia.
Yeah, I was just thinking the same thing, yeah. And then Jágr, or sorry, Armia just goes down to give that much more oomph to your fourth line. Does Jágr want to go somewhere where he's on the third line?
Might not have a choice, right?
We should start talking about him in the third person. Jágr wants this. Jágr doesn't want to go there.
I think only he can.
That's true.
Yeah.
I leave myself some wiggle room at the deadline.
Yeah.
Make a move if necessary, depending on how things work out and assuming they're in the playoff push.
And Armia needs the ice time. Back to Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Norm, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you doing today?
No. Well, sir, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. You guys are remembering, you got to remember one thing about the Bombers. They haven't lost to those boatmen in how long? It's been quite a while, right?
I believe so. They haven't lost to Toronto in a while.
2 years ago, they did.
Yeah, last year they swept them, but prior to that.
I think what they're going to do tonight, they're going to, they know what it feels like to be punched in the mouth from Calgary. I think it's their turn to put a weapon on those Argos. Send them back home where they belong. Sink their boat. We need a boat sinking party in Winnipeg tonight. I hope it happens. I got to say one thing. Isn't it about the Jets there? If they sign Trouba, doesn't it put them over the cap? I'll hang up, guys.
If they do sign Trouba, well, it depends. He's got a contract this year, so if they sign him to an extension, they're not going to up his salary this upcoming year, so it would not put him over. If they do sign him to an extension, it would probably kick in after this season.
And Enstrom comes off the books.
But
there's all kinds. They got it might be 10 RFAs next year and 3 UFAs, so there's all kinds of things going down at the end of this season.
Thanks for the call, Norm. We appreciate it. The Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Who's next?
Gregory.
Gregory, you're on the big show.
Yeah, it was a bad night to be a sports fan, so I tuned into the ESPYs.
Uh-huh.
And there was at least, I'll say, 5 debatable/questionable awards handed out last night.
Just 5?
Yeah, just 5 on my recollection. Best NFL player, Aaron Rodgers. Nope, that goes to Zeke or Matty Ice.
Okay.
Best game. It went to the Super Bowl. Nope. In my view, that should have went to World Series Game 7.
Okay.
It beat out that moment, as well as, I think, if memory recalls, the national championship game, Clemson versus Alabama.
That was a good game.
Better than the Super Bowl.
Okay, the World Series game had more ups and downs. We had a rain delay, and the winning team exercised 107 years of frustration.
Well,
which leads me to best team. I'm a basketball fan. I'm kind of like Mr. Basketball here. Golden State does not deserve that. That doesn't deserve that. It should have been gone to the Cubs or the South Carolina women's basketball team. I will tell you why, if either one of those two, and I think I give a slightly higher mark to the South Carolina women's basketball team. This basketball team was virtually the supreme underdogs in a national semifinal game in the American Airlines Center.
And they beat UConn in that game, right? They beat UConn?
Yeah. Buzzer beater.
Okay, what's your last one, Gregor? Because we've got to take a break.
And as well as another one is best female athlete. I would say all props to Simone Biles of the women's gymnastics team, but that needs to go to Serena.
Okay. Well, we appreciate it, Gregory. We'll discuss this and much more.
You're controversial, man.
Yeah, I don't know about all those, but I like the controversy you've begun here on The Big Show. More of your calls on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290, when we come back on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca, and we want to remind everybody that the deadline for our Manitobaville contest is this Friday at noon. Any extra attention, you better get it done. Send them in, TSN1290.ca. Put a video together, we'll announce some finalists, and the public will vote on who will get the $25,000. Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 with Jim, Troy, and Brandon on a Minuke Denture Blue Bomber game day. Minuke Denture Blue Bomber game day kicks off at 5:30 today here on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Mike, you're on the Boss Pizza Fan Line. Go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I really have to express disagreement with Troy's opinion that the issue of continuing to play if a player may or may not have a concussion should lay with the player and they can sign a waiver. I just have to agree with that so strongly.
Fair enough.
Now, Troy, help me understand why does that make sense to you?
Well, I say that from the perspective of if I was an athlete, I would want to be able to make the decision myself. Not from, like, I try to separate, I'm looking at it from an organizational standpoint or the league, I completely understand putting things into effect. But on the other flip side of that, as an athlete, that I want to be able to, like, I would sign a waiver and those sorts of things to play and to make the decision myself if a doctor says, "Okay, you've got a concussion," or whatever. Like, I want to maintain that ultimate decision as a player.
Putting aside, Troy, the fact that I think you're jeopardizing your livelihood, your family, and all the legal repercussions, do you really think in that moment when you are potentially concussed that you're making the best decision for yourself and your team? The logic kind of escapes me that in a moment when you may or may not be impaired, someone's going to say, "Hey, Troy, what do you think?"
Well, I'm making, although some could argue this, I'm making the decision right now when I'm not impaired. And, you know, just having been in that environment before, you know, and I've had concussions before, it doesn't enable or doesn't hurt your ability to think, man. It's just there are things that happen to you as far as the symptoms and all the rest of it, right? So I know what you're getting at, and even when I say that, like, I'm just saying that from a player's perspective, and I have been in situations where I've looked, I know that I had a concussion, and I've looked at the team or the doctor that I was dealing with and lied and said that I didn't feel this or I didn't feel that just to get back out on the field. So I think, you know what, man? I think most players still, right now today, most players, high-level athletes, pro or like high-level amateur, male or female, I think the majority would still lie to get back into their field of play, whatever it might be.
Just to be clear, like, we're talking after the medical team has cleared him. We're not talking as if the medical team said, "No, you're not cleared," and an athlete's still choosing to play, are we? We're talking about, like, I'm thinking of the worst case scenario being, well, you're cleared, but these are the risks of another one, and this is what could happen, and you then choosing.
Well, yeah, because you'd always have to be cleared from an injury, right? So,
yeah, I think it's just kind of a general sort of thing, right?
Yeah, general. Like, the majority of the time, I dare say, when you have you have to be real messed up to not be able to, you know, there's varied degrees of concussion as well, right? Where, for sure, for instance, the Bambi legs thing, where you're messed up and the whole world can see that you've got a problem right now where your brain isn't working properly. You can't walk or skate off the surface that you're on. And then there's the other times where you lay down for a sec and you're like, "Holy cow." But you get up and then a doctor starts talking to you and you stare them in the face. "You okay?" And I've seen guys that can't answer questions, like, you know, count from 100, minus seven and go backwards, and then guys can't do that or name the months backwards, that sort of thing, or other guys that can get through all that and they're hurt or they're concussed, but they can still manage their way through that. It's just as a player, I know the mentality, and I, you know, the guys and gals that are out there performing at a high level, most of them still lie. It's a huge issue today in sports, even maybe more so than 5 years ago, because players now know that, hey, if you are concussed, you're out of the game. And so I'm just approaching that from the side, maybe somewhat similar to Sid Crosby here, where he goes down in the playoff game, the organization comes out Tuesday, he's skating Thursday, Friday, plays Saturday. What is that, right? But as a player, that's, I would want to be able to, hey, I'm okay. I want to go. I'm good to go. And if the, you know, it was our understanding prior to that specific instance, supposed to be 7 days before, or after the symptoms are gone, before you can go and engage again in contact sports, right? That was the first time we'd ever seen something like that happen.
I'm not hearing anything, Troy, frankly, that really says this decision shouldn't be potentially taken out of the athlete's hands. Because what I'm hearing is a recurring theme of sort of almost a civil libertarian argument. As a player, I want to have the right, fair enough. But all the things I've heard out of your mouth are along the lines of, my competitive instincts will want me to go back in, which really says to me, my judgment in this matter really can't be trusted. I should be deferring to a professional. And time. I can't think of one instance in the past, with all the history on concussions, where people have said, yeah, that player should have went back in. Or, gee, I'm glad that player went back in. I'm at a loss as to any circumstance where there's been a positive outcome where the decision has been the player's.
Well, Mike, look at Sidney Crosby.
Dude.
We just talked about it. 5 days later, he's on the ice, won the Stanley Cup, and he just spoke yesterday, says he feels fine.
I would bet that 80, maybe, and this is probably low, you know, if you take the last 10 years and the number of real concussions suffered in contact sport, I bet we don't even know about 80% of them. Do you remember the game, was it in the Super Bowl?
Edelman. Edelman or Amendola.
Yeah, one of those two guys got absolutely destroyed and couldn't walk, and then kind of got his bearings after about 5 seconds on the field and stayed in for that drive, and I think ultimately scored the touchdown for the Patriots on that same drive. That, so, yeah, like it's...
Look at that umpire the other day. Took a foul ball off the mask, was wobbly-legged, Bambi legs as we called it, stayed in for another inning, and then pulled himself. And he was looked at by medical staff. And in the end, they're like, they did the tests, like follow the finger, all the things you're supposed to do. And then he goes, I'm fine. And he called another inning of baseball behind the plate in the major leagues, and then he pulled himself. Said, now I'm not feeling well, which in my experience of concussions is how it's worked, including when I was knocked unconscious. The first 15 minutes after I woke up, I never felt better. But then after that 15 minutes is when I started getting dizzy again.
It's just a neat debate. Like it's a fascinating debate for me because there's definitely two sides of it where you have the athletes who, you know, want to maintain it's, and I liken it sort of to wearing a seatbelt in society where I don't, you know, it's a pain. It's still a pain in the butt. I hate wearing a seatbelt. I understand that it keeps me safe and all the rest of it. And of course you got to wear it, but then you have the governing body says, Hey man, you got to wear a seatbelt because of the cost involved if you get injured. And plus we don't want to leave the decision up to you that it's the right thing to do. I know that from the other side, I know it's the right thing to do. From an individual, like you said, civil liberty, I think is the phrase that you put together, that I don't want to have to wear a seatbelt, but I do have to. And as an athlete, I want to be able to make that decision whether or not I want to go forward. And I think ultimately what sort of gave birth to this conversation is if you're, you know, 3-4 concussions into your career and people are telling you you're not allowed to play anymore sort of thing, ultimately, I think athletes want to maintain that decision as to whether or not they want to keep playing.
And Mike, like from your perspective of what I think you're saying along the lines of it should be, you know, dictated, I equate it to smoking. I mean, how many people are told they should stop smoking? But at the end of the day, it's their decision. Mike?
Mike's gone. Okay. But I think that might ultimately be where maybe it has to go. But the only problem is you need the leagues to have complete and utter open transparency on what happens to you when you suffer some of these concussions. Because NFL players, you know, it's a bit more knowledgeable now, but back then they didn't know.
Like in the 70s, yeah, 80s, right? The study done and they hid the results.
It would be like smoking and not knowing it's bad for you. Kind of like exactly what happened, right? Yeah. Like, so I worry. The only reason I worry about that is you wonder if leagues never become fully open about that and they keep things under the covers and they give players some of the information and they act on that without knowing X amount of percentage as well as the, you know, kind of the consequences of multiple head injuries.
And kind of similar to the smoking thing, as you're saying, like for kids, it shouldn't be, there's no decision making. The governing bodies of sports at younger levels rule supreme, and you have to approach that with immense caution and err on the side of well-being, no question about it. But at some point in time, once you become the adult, where legally for smoking, you can start, you know, go, you know, smoke your lungs out, go, it's your decision. Just a similar type of argument or understanding in suffering concussions and what you want to do going forward as an athlete.
Thanks for the call, Mike. It's an interesting discussion for sure, and we'll continue it on the Boss Pizza Fan Line if you wish. 780-1290. Ron, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Okay, so as for the Yager talk that you guys were talking about earlier, I take a flyer on that, but, you know, $1 million in Winnipeg and $1 million in Florida are a lot different, too, weather-wise and money because of the tax situation. I don't know if he'd come here, but I think it would be a good thing. Then there was something I wanted to talk about on the ESPYs. Now, I never watched the ESPYs, never have, but I just happened to change it at the right time where I was just looking through the channels, and they were doing the Arthur Ashe Award. Now, I don't know if you guys, is anybody there watched the whole thing last night?
I yes. saw that saw presentation, most of it. Yeah.
Okay, so who was getting the Arthur Ashe Award? I missed that part, but I listened to the speech of the gentleman that was up there.
Mrs. Shriver, in 1968 or 69, mm-hmm. I believe, created the first Special Olympics.
Yeah.
And it included 1,000 athletes from Canada and the U.S.
Yeah.
And so who got the award was her son accepting on her behalf, but it was basically for creating and inventing the Special Olympics and then driving it forward to where it is today.
If I would have watched that whole program, that probably would have been the best part of that whole night. And I listened to him speak. Michelle Obama, who's been instrumental in that area of Special Olympics, and she's just a fantastic woman. That's the way I look at it. But that part was the best part of the whole night. So I'll leave that with you guys. Take care.
Thanks, Ron.
I dare say it pretty much always is, isn't it?
I love the ESPYs, and I love it because they're entertaining and funny, and I love the stories.
And that award specifically is always monumental, yes, and wonderful, yeah.
And the stories they come up with at the ESPYs year in and year out, I there's nothing I probably retweet more in one night than the feature stories that come out, such as the one last night in the Humanitarian Award.
Yeah, and the little JJ kid, too, getting the Jimmy V Perseverance yes. Award. That was they're kind of hard to watch at some point, but it's the amount of uplifting personal stories they're able to kind of mingle through the night. I agree. That's always the best part. And then I enjoyed the Jimmy V one maybe the most, just because to see that little kid just battle. He's just so charismatic. And
the opening monologue's always beauty as well.
Yeah. Sorry, it was the Legacy Award the last night. The Humanitarian Award actually went to Calgary Flames defenseman and captain Mark Giordano. It was the Eunice Kennedy Shriver who accepted or was given the Legacy Award last night for starting the Special Olympics, and it was her son who accepted on her behalf at the ESPYs. Thanks for the call, Ron. Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. More of your calls or text us at 1290-90 with standard message rates applying. More of you next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
This Friday is team registration deadline for MTS Super Spike. Superspike.ca. Midnight Friday is your deadline to get your team in for this year's great event. This is the Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. And mentioning the ESPYs, I have a very, very soft spot for Vin Scully. And I miss him dearly. I don't know how many since I was 19 or 20 to just get the late night Dodger games on TV and listen to Vin Scully. I really miss him, and it was great to see him be honored last night as well. 780-1290 on The Big Show with Jim Troy and Brandon on a Manuk Denture Blue Bomber game day. Dan, you're on the program. Go ahead.
I just thought I'd give you a call. But something's been bothering me. It's got to do with golf, the PGA Tour. I don't know if anybody else noticed it, but I thought something strange happened back in the Travelers Tournament. Everybody recalls the one that Jordan Spieth exploded it in the sand trap in the extra hole and beat Danny Berger.
Right.
You know what? I don't know if I was imagining things. I did phone the PGA of America, and I talked to this lady named Emily the other day, Emily Sittos or something. She was supposed to get back to me, but I said to her, on the 18th hole when they played the first time, when he was going head-to-head with Berger, Jordan had about a 35 or 40 footer. He put it about 18 inches from the cup. And I was positive that he did an illegal thing there while 25,000 people around the green were watching and maybe 40 million people on TV, including you guys. I thought after he picked up his marker and he was going to cut out, I thought he went to the ball and either I was mistaken or something. It just didn't seem right. I thought he either touched his golf ball or picked it up about a quarter of an inch and dropped it back on the green. Now, I think we all know, if we're golfers, that this is a one-stroke penalty or signing a wrong scorecard. So I asked this Emily to get back to me. She still hasn't. But I wondered if any of you guys ever noticed that if you were watching the tournament 3 weeks ago.
I didn't notice that.
I did not notice either. I will look and see if I can find video of it.
Well, this is it. I couldn't find the video. Otherwise, I wouldn't have phoned that Emily, and I wouldn't have given you guys a call.
Well, then it never happened, Dan. No, yeah, I'm just kidding.
Somebody would have probably noticed it, Danny. I mean, I just, because it just sort of struck me, because I've golfed for many, many years, like 45, 50 years, and I just think something is wrong there, but nobody seems to bring it up after, you know.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't see it. And to your point, like, that's how that lady lost two strokes. Was a viewer actually called in or emailed in while watching the event?
Oh, boy, that's been a huge
remember
issue.
That?
That's been a big debate. It happened with Tiger. I think Tiger was the first, right?
Yep.
He got someone called in and got him. And since then, it's been a big debate. Should those viewing at home over the TV be able to call in things that happen and cause remarkable trouble, or should it be allowed, officiated almost in that matter, right? Where I'm sitting up in Winnipeg and I can make a call down and say, hey, this happened on the whatever hole, and then massive implications.
Like, I hate
where does the officiating stop?
And I hate it.
Imagine if you apply that to other sports.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, we hear, 15,000 ref you suck chants at the MTS Center. You got to flood Toronto with offices with a call and, hey, you miss an offside here.
Well,
miss a penalty here. Like, it's. Just let the guys play. If you can't see it on the course in real time, then I'm okay with it being let go.
Like, if the officials miss it on the course, then, like in a lot of other sports, it's a missed call. Yeah.
Rick Ralph just tweeted, NHL Jets sixth-round pick in 2015, shares by birthday just a few years apart. Mason Appleton excited to sign with the Winnipeg Jets, looking forward to the next chapter of my career. And we should say the Andrew Kopp contract has not been made official by the Jets. There's been no official release. It is reported, though, by both Aaron Ward and Darren Dreger that it's a two-year deal. I like to always make that official when it's become official, but no word yet. Expect a press release coming as well. Speaking of Rick Ralph, gentlemen, he will likely have an announcement to make at 11 a.m. today on the Don Vito Roundtable when he joins the show. And some changes coming up, but I always sort of like to let the people involved announce their own announcements, and then we'll probably discuss it tomorrow. But some big news for TSN 1290, and we'll get into it a little bit more tomorrow. But Don Vito Roundtable with Rick Ralph coming up at 11 a.m., then the afternoon ride with Hustler,
at 3 o'clock. He'll be on before that at 2 with the Gondola Pizza warm-up, and then Manuk Dencher, Blue Bomber game day. Bombers and Argos tonight. Darren Bombing will be hosting the show, of course, with Troy Westwood, Chris Walby, and that starts at 5:30 this evening right here on TSN 1290. Final go-round, Bombers, Argos. Who do you have?
Oh, I can honestly say I'm not sure yet. I got to dig a little bit more digging. I certainly hope the Bombers win, and I do think it's going to be wicked close. And I guess if I'm being pushed, I'll lean to the Bombers winning off the foot of Justin Medlock, and Mr. Perfection goes to work again. But, boy, I'm scared crapless.
I don't know what happens, but if the Bombers lose tonight, I will no longer be at IGF for the rest of my life.
Even if you want to, you might not be.
I'll take the bullet for the rest of Winnipeg.
I got a ticket. Sorry. We'll refund you right here at the gate. Yeah, you know what? I agree with you. I think it comes down to a field goal tonight. It could go either way. If I was putting it on a Sports Select ticket, I literally would take the team that pays more just because I don't know, and it's going to be real close. But it's going to be real interesting to me. There's a lot of intrigue to this game, as we've been talking about all week. I'm really interested to see the offense, Matt Nichols, how they bounce back.
And can they keep up to Ricky Ray in that offense, right?
And if the defense can what they can get done or accomplished against Ricky Ray in the offense. Should be a good one tonight. Remind everybody that the TSN Golf for Kids Classic is on Tuesday, August 15th. There's still some spots available for that. $150 per person, $500 per foursome. TSN1290.ca has your details on that. We'll be back tomorrow morning to break it all down for you. On behalf of Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki, and myself, Jim Toth, we thank you for listening, and we'll be back with The Big Show tomorrow morning at 6 on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.